Welcome to the Insomnia Stream, a Yankee View edition. The Yankee View edition. I'm your host, of course, Devin Stack. Hope you're having a wonderful evening or morning, depending on where you are on this rotating globe we call planet Earth. Isn't it nice? So the flat tards, they're receding. They're finally receding. Maybe it really was the final experiment. Anyway, I wanted to talk tonight about a man, a yet another educated WASP elitist who tried to ring the alarm bell of the dangers of diversity. Warn everyone of what could befall this nation if we were to listen to the Jewish propaganda that was, by the time he was around, had saturated the country post-World War II and was beginning to brainwash the boomers. And just, I guess, show that there were people out there trying to do something. Trying to do something. What he saw is a failure of the people fighting that fight at the time. What his recommendations were to those people so they would succeed. Whether or not they followed his advice. And what we can learn from that whole situation. I think there are a lot of people who are at least pleased, and there's no reason why you shouldn't be, that at least the topic of race and IQ is becoming a little more mainstream. And by that, I mean, I think Tucker, which we're going to watch a little tiny part of that interview he had with Chris Cuomo, where Tucker seems to explicitly talk about race and IQ in Stephen Molyneux terms. Like, pretty much exactly, sounds exactly like Stephen Molyneux 10 years ago. And these are the kinds of things he wouldn't have been saying if they were not already, if they had not already permeated throughout the zeitgeist, I guess, to the extent that they have. But why we also can't stop, or we need to keep pushing, that now that we've got some people at least to admit that there is a connection between race and IQ, that we can't say, oh, and that's where it stops. In the same way, it's ridiculous to say that, oh, you know, all of a sudden, you know, your skin color, you inherit that. You inherit your height. You inherit your eye color. Like, all these things are genetic, but for some reason, the most complex organ in your body, the brain, is somehow immune to genetics, right? Your IQ is the only thing, as stupid as it is to imply, or not even to imply, just to say that IQ can't, intelligence can't possibly be heritable. Intelligence is not the only thing your brain is doing. Intelligence is not the easiest thing to measure, but it's not the only thing that's going on inside your brain. Your processing power is not there's a lot of other things that are heritable, like behavior. And in fact, inadvertently, we're going to discuss some people that have inherited behavior. And the role that they played in trying to mask this idea that behavior or intelligence or literally anything other than the obvious that you can't argue, like skin color, is heritable. Now, the man on the screen here, this is a man that, like I said, he actually is descended from founding stock Americans. He was educated, you know, at Princeton University. Yeah, very elite man. In fact, he went on. He was on the board of Delta Airlines up until the 90s, the 1990s. His name's Charlton Putnam. Charlton Putnam. Now, Charlton Putnam was born in 1901 in New York City. He then graduated from Princeton University in 1924. He earned a law degree from Columbia Law School in 1932. And then between 1933 and the 1950s, he started an airline called the Chicago and Southern Airline, or Airlines, I guess. And then around 1953, they merged with Delta Airlines, which exists today, obviously. And he became the chairman of the board of Delta Airlines and remained a board member, like I said, up until the 1990s. Around 1954, we had the Brown versus the Board of Education Supreme Court ruling. The decision that desegregated schools, and this kind of triggered Putnam's activism. He feared that by mixing blacks with whites, you would have a degradation of the civilization, that different races had different capabilities, different aptitudes, and that we would not be able to maintain our society as it was in 1954 if we started to pretend that these differences did not exist. He began doing the research because a lot of this research was very taboo post World War II, and we'll go into more about why that is here in a moment. He published an open letter to the president, basically complaining that the ruling was oh, sorry, I'm trying to like get my thing ready here. That the ruling was bad for civilization. So this is his open letter to Dwight Eisenhower. We're not going to go over all that. We have so many other things to go over, but I recommend you check it out. I would read this, but it's a long letter. The short of it is he thinks that there are racial differences that can't be ignored, and that if we do ignore them, we ignore them at our peril. And I think everyone alive today, now that we have the hindsight of living 60 plus years in the future, we can look back and go, yep, yeah. there's been a few problems with integration. I also, when I was looking this up, I found a lot of letters to the editor from people complaining or agreeing with his letter, and found that many of his detractors were Christians using a religious argument that sounds very boomery, that we're all God's children, and this is the kind of argument that he was up against, especially from Northerners, but from Southerners to a lesser extent as well. So there's lots of these here, but again, we don't have time. We have so much stuff we're going to go over tonight. The book he wrote in 1958, or I'm sorry, 1959, and I think it was published right around 1959 to 1960, was called Race and Reason: A Yankee View. And it argued that racial integration defied biological science, and that black shortcomings were all based on genetics, and that you were, environment was never going to change that. He then decided to speak directly to the only people who were trying to main or fight against this integration fever that was going on throughout the United States. And that was the Southerners, specifically in Mississippi. Mississippi, they still had the Jim Crow laws. You had, you had separate bathrooms and separate waiting rooms and separate, you know, it was the separate but equal kind of situation. And even though they had integrated the schools, the Supreme Court had not ruled that you couldn't do that yet. And so you still had some level of segregation going on, mostly in Mississippi, and Jackson was kind of like the heart of that stronghold that was going on. So in 1961, he went to go speak to the organization that was organizing the pushback from all this. Really the environment at the time, you had the Freedom Bus protest going on, which was basically Jews got a bunch of black people and they would go on buses from out of state into Mississippi, and then they would walk into places that were only, you know, where no blacks were allowed. Then the blacks would get arrested, and then they would go to their friends in the media and make a big deal. Next thing you know, all over national news, everyone else in the North, you know, specifically, they're seeing images of black people getting arrested just for walking up and trying to order a sandwich or whatever, right? And Putnam knew that how this was viewed in the North, and he also kind of got a sense that the people in the South didn't understand why the Yankees were looking at this as if it was some kind of horrific injustice. That they didn't understand because they didn't live amongst blacks, you know, for the most part, not to the degree that the people in Jackson, Mississippi did. But they also didn't have the same kind of history, and they didn't have the same kind of experience, racial experience. A lot of the great Negro migration was still kind of, you know, just in the beginning phases. We had a few race riots that had already begun in the North, but it hadn't really ticked up yet. And so people, you know, wives at home watching the news, were watching these images of these well-dressed, Jewish-funded Northern black people getting arrested for, you know, being peaceful and not really causing any problems. And it kind of gave them the impression that, oh, well, apparently in Jackson, Mississippi, if you're just this nice, well-mannered black person minding your own business, the white people just arrest you for no fucking reason. And so here's a news report that, or at least a part of a news report from 1961, right around the exact time he would be giving this speech, to give you an idea of kind of what was going on here. You gotta love the propaganda music too, like the, you know, let's play the patriotic American music as we show these images of these brave protesters busing themselves down into Mississippi.
This is the objective, the clean modern bus station in Jackson, Mississippi. The battle lines are drawn, the defenses complete. The bus station, dwarfed by the downtown skyscrapers of Jackson, is guarded outwardly by the entire police force of the city. There are others around the corner, plainclothes deputies wait. Just out of sight, troops are standing, the hot southern sun glinting on their fixed bayonets. For Jackson, Mississippi, the enemy is at the gates. The hour has come. The invaders are 14 Negro and white passengers on an inbound bus. They are vastly outnumbered, even by the reporters covering their journey.
Gee, imagine that. They were outnumbered by the reporters covering it, because why? Because it's a propaganda campaign. It wasn't blacks locally that were doing this. It was blacks literally funded by Jews, some of whom we'll meet here in a moment, that were being bussed down. The whole trip was paid for. Their clothes were paid for. They were literally dressing up black people to look like white people, and then sending them down to the South to get arrested in front of cameras in front of cameras that worked for Jewish networks. And so they were doing this in an effort, obviously, to change the segregation laws. The legal context there was segregation was still, you know, it was left up to the states at, you know, at the time in 1961. So it was still the law of the land in Mississippi, and it was upheld by state statutes that mandated separate facilities like, you know, buses, restaurants. In fact, it was upheld by a previous Supreme Court decision in 1896, which was Plessy versus Ferguson. And they allowed separate, quote, separate but equal facilities. And by 1961, federal courts, usually at the behest of Jewish groups and legal scholars, were chipping away little by little. In 1954, you had the Brown versus the Board of Education, which desegregated the schools. And in 1960, you had Boynton versus Virginia, which extended the same logic to interstate bus terminals, trying to say that the federal government had jurisdiction over the bus terminals specifically. That's why they were using the buses, because it was interstate travel. You see, so it was tricky legal. It was Jewish tricks. It was Jewish tricks, tricky little legal tricks that, well, how can we get them while pretending that we're respecting state rights? Well, then we say that it's interstate commerce. And because interstate commerce is under the jurisdiction of the federal government, now all of a sudden the federal government has a say in what's going on. So this is going on. You have protests there. You have the NAACP there. You've got a Jewish group called CORE. You have a couple other Jewish-funded groups paying demonstrators to be there. And he went down to speak at this hotel. I forgot the name. It doesn't matter. Oh, it's right there. The Heidelberg Hotel October of 1961, and he wanted to again explain to them how this problem had begun, what sorts of people were causing it, what the North thought of this issue, and how the South needs to change their strategy if they want the North to take them seriously. And without further ado, we're going to play several clips from this speech in 1961. I think you guys are going to really appreciate his public speaking abilities. Oh, wait, you know what? I lied. Let's play this first. This is the head of the organization. Oh, I wrote it down here. My notes are pages and pages long. Doesn't really matter. This is the head of the organization that invited him down there, speaking to the press during the busing incident. And you can kind of see, it would have been nice if he had media training, I think, but you can kind of see what their argument is here. So this is a local in Jackson arguing for keeping segregation to the national press that is poured into their town to do propaganda pieces in support of these Jewish-funded demonstrators.
If you want to know how integration has been held outside Mississippi for this long.
Well, there's the name of the organization. Citizens Council. There it is. I knew it was Citizens something.
You must first call on the Citizens Council, an organization dedicated to states' rights and racial integrity. Support comes from Robert E. Lee, Stonewall Jackson, and 85,000 living white citizens of Mississippi. The overwhelming political power of the council is well demonstrated by the fact that it is partially supported by state taxes. William Simmons is secretary of the Jackson Citizens Council, editor of its newspaper, and president of its forum, which produced radio and television programs attacking the advance of integration.
The South has a large Negro population. In our state, it's about 42% of the total. And anyone with two eyes in his head and with roughly normal vision can look around him and see that there is a vast and permanent difference between the white and colored people. That is, Abraham Lincoln so wisely said a number of years ago, would forever prohibit them from living on terms of equality in the same society.
That's something that's going to be talked about later, that a lot of people don't realize, especially Republicans that like to brag that Abraham Lincoln was a Republican all the time because he ended slavery. Lincoln had no intention whatsoever of granting the freed slaves equal status. In fact, he was in support of a plan that would ship them all back to Africa. He publicly, and I don't have the exact quote here with me. They're going to mention it later. Or at least there's actually a handful of quotes from Lincoln saying exactly that. And Republicans, as much as they love to brag about Lincoln, oh, Lincoln was a Republican, they never mention that part of it.
That, just in a nutshell, is the reason.
How do you, as a Southerner, justify your position in that here is a Negro citizen, he pays taxes, and sometimes he votes, and he's a citizen. How do you justify feeling that he is not, in the eyes of the law and in the eyes of everything that we know of as American and democratic, that he is not your equal?
Well, I don't know the equality in the... I'm really not sure how you mean equal.
Well, I mean equal in every sense of the word.
Well, equality in every sense of the word is obviously a myth. There are no people who are equal, no two people. There are no two races who are equal. They have different qualities, and this is an objective matter that can be determined by objective standards. As far as the more subjective aspects of equality go, we believe in equality before the law for all people. This is something that's quite distinct from individual talent or capacity or accomplishment. I think they're really two separate things.
Well, let's get down to basics. The separate restrooms, the separate lunch counters, things of this type, the separate schools. How do you justify this if you think of him as an American citizen like you are?
Well, I don't see that there's any special connection. Why should the Negro feel any more discriminated against than the white man for associating with his own kind? White people who are segregated don't seem to resent it, and I don't think most Negroes resent it. They seem to prefer that.
And that's part of the bad argument, although, to be fair, at the time, and we'll go into that a little bit later, the local black people weren't the ones protesting. It was all people from out of state. It was all Jewish-funded people from out of state that were protesting. So he's right to some degree, but unfortunately, and this is part of why they needed, I think, some advice from this guy, just like a lot of people today, a lot of MAGA boomer types will say, well, actually, it's, DEI is bad for black people. It's just like, just shut the fuck up. Advocate for yourself, for fuck's sake. Who cares if it's bad for black people, right? And clearly they don't prefer it. Clearly, I mean, he had a good point. He ruined it, but he had a good point when he first said that, like...
White people who are segregated don't seem to resent it.
Yeah, that white people are segregated. So what's the issue? If white people are segregated and we like it, and black people are segregated and they don't like it, maybe it's a problem with if you don't like being stuck around black people, why the fuck would white people want to be stuck around black people? You're black, and you don't even like it. But be that as it may, Putnam decided to go down there and after publishing his book was actually very instrumental in a lot of, even though a lot of people haven't heard of it, in shaping a lot of people's minds. In fact, even David Duke mentioned it, that he read it as a teenager and that it kind of sent him down the rabbit hole. According to Wikipedia, we used to have a real country. It was required reading for high school students in Louisiana for a time. And I don't know if that's when David Duke, maybe he was required to read it. But this was a very influential book at the time. And, you know, so he did what he could. He did what he could. So here's the beginning of his speech here.
In spite of the unassailable logic of your position, you're under harassment and attack from all sides. The dean of the Harvard Law School fumes with fury at the mention of Mississippi. The kindly housewife in Wisconsin turns away at the name Jackson. I'm sure you often wonder why. And since there's an old adage that to get anything done, you must first define the problem, I'm going to inquire, what is the problem in this case?
What is the problem? As I said, there was a lot of Jewish groups doing this. It wasn't the local black people that were actually doing this. In fact, they had trouble organizing. When they did organize, they couldn't fill up a room. All this was coming, it was all pressure from the outside. So I wonder, because he's very keen on being very precise with what the problem is and that we can't tackle this problem unless we're precise about what that problem is, I wonder if he'll mention that.
Some of you may answer, well, it's of course the Supreme Court decision of 1954. Others are wont to say that it's power-hungry centralists trying to destroy the rights of the states. Still others will say that it's minority group pressure and infiltration of communism. Now, in my judgment, to some extent, all those things are true. All of them are problems, but they all exist because of something else. If you could correct the fundamental difficulty, these others would disappear.
Yes, you are right. If you could correct the fundamental difficulty, the rest of these things would disappear. So what is this fundamental difficulty? What is it that's causing this problem, I wonder?
To understand this basic problem, I must clarify one issue. For a long time, a running battle has been going on among scientists concerning the race question. It can be put in a nutshell by saying that a cult has developed alongside the left-wing school of political thought, which tries to prove that environment is completely responsible for all differences between races, that nothing is due to inborn or inherited qualities. Now, obviously, if this could be proved, it would lend support to a variety of social programs. It still would not, in my opinion, eliminate a man's responsibility for himself, nor would it mean that social and cultural similarity are desirable ideals. But as far as races and substocks are concerned, it would remove many obstacles. And it certainly is the sort of thing which our minority groups of every color and race would welcome.
Exactly. And that's why we need to push back on it. That's why I'm glad, to some extent, people are. The idea that race is not genetic opens up the door to all kinds of bullshit, all kinds of shenanigans, and all kinds of weaponization against white people that we've experienced for the last several decades as a result of this simple truth being suppressed and mutilated and lied about, and people being brainwashed against believing this idea that we are all, you know, we're all exactly the fucking same. And the problem with that is, well, aside from it not being true, is the direct result is outcomes do not reflect this. Outcomes do not match up with this theory that we're all the same. And so you have to figure out why. You know, you have to, well, if we're all the same, and yet black people are consistently underperforming, and not just black people, every group is performing at different levels, and it's measurable. then we have to figure out the why. And the why, inevitably, must be, well, you're getting oppressed by the white people. The reason why black people aren't performing well in school, it must be because something that white people are doing. And so, of course, we need to correct that. And it also means that since it can't be anything that the black people are doing, they are not part of the solution. We are the problem, and so we also have to be the solution. We have to take all the responsibility for this issue, and we have to pay the price no matter what it is, because we are the oppressors, and we are the ones responsible for this discrepancy. And that's why they have to keep promoting this idea that white people are not more able to create and maintain civilizations, but rather we are uniquely evil. We are uniquely evil and adept at oppressing all the other races and taking advantage of them in order to produce the societies that we have. It's all actually off the backs of these people, and we owe them for all of our successes. This is the same kind of propaganda that was in the film that we went over last stream. You know, all that was shot, that was 1958, The Defiant Ones. So that was literally the same year that he wrote his letter to Eisenhower. They produced this film all that imagery of the white man climbing on top of the black man in order to get out of the pit. And so that is one of the roots of this issue. This is why this is an important topic, or at least one of the reasons why it's an important topic, and why there are so many people that are very interested in keeping the lie going.
The difficulty is that it has no foundation in fact. Almost everyone is ready to admit that heredity makes a difference in individuals within a single race, and to maintain that this process stops when we compare averages and qualities between races is a strange and forced bit of wishful thinking. Science, of course, does not dismiss anything because it seems strange and forced. But the burden of proof is clearly upon those who would deny the obvious, and this burden of proof no equalitarian scientist has been able to sustain.
So the term you'll hear, equalitarian, is, I guess, like egalitarian. So he uses the term equalitarian throughout the speech, basically saying that represents the people who think that all people are exactly the same. He'll also say environmentalist, which doesn't mean what it means today, but that's people that believe that all of intelligence and aptitude is all a result of environment, that heredity doesn't have anything to do with that, that evolution stops at the neck, and that, skin color and everything else, maybe that you can inherit that, but everyone has the exact same brain. So you'll hear him say environmentalist, and that's what that means. But his point here is, look, you're saying something that goes against the obvious. You know, all we have to do is look over at continents like Africa, and we can see lots of primitive civilizations. And then we can look at continents like Europe and see far more advanced civilizations. And we look all across the world, and we can see these very distinct differences in civilizations. And the defining factor seems to be the racial makeup of the people who built and live in those civilizations. And so if you're going to tell me that something that is completely contrary to all of the obvious evidence, like if you're going to try to tell me, for example, that the sky isn't blue, you're going to the burden of proof is on you. You're going to have to be the one that provides this evidence that it's not this way, because anyone with any kind of sense can look at the world and come to the conclusion that black people and not just black people, but non-whites, don't seem to have the same capabilities of whites. And so you're going to be the ones that are going to have to explain this.
The idea that all races are equal in their adaptability to our Western culture took root in America in the classrooms of Frantz Boas at Columbia University in the late 1920s. With Boas as students or assistants, we find the names of Otto Kleinberg, Melville Herskovitz, Gene Weltfish, and Ashley Montague. Now, Gene Weltfish later became a member of certain organizations cited by the Attorney General as subversive and publicly announced that she had evidence to prove that the United States had used germ warfare in Korea. Some of the others were doubtless sincere or perhaps biased by their personal backgrounds.
Oh, look at that. Surprise, surprise, a bunch of Jews. The reason why the world believes that we're all the fucking same is literally a bunch of Jews. The quote-unquote anthropologists and scientists behind this retarded idea that goes against everything that we know about the universe and our lying eyes, it's all thanks to what he calls the Boas Group, headed up by Franz Boas. And Franz Boas was a German-Jewish anthropologist who undermined the scientific foundation of racial hierarchy that existed up until this time. He was born in Germany, immigrated to the United States around the turn of the century. Oh, look at that. Look at all this flood of Jews that came into America around the turn of the century. I feel like that's like an ongoing theme on this show. I almost feel like instead of calling it the insomnia stream, we should call it the Jewish immigrants from around the turn of the century stream. Because it does seem like, I'm pretty good at pattern recognition. I don't know, maybe that's something I inherited. You know, my dad's an engineer. Maybe that's something that I inherited. So, I don't know. I'm seeing a pattern here. I'm seeing a pattern. And I wonder if this behavior this pattern of behavior we're seeing from these immigrants is also inherited. I wonder if that's another reason why we can't just stop at saying yes, race and IQ is real. We have to say behavior and race is also real. When you look around and see again and again and again and again Eastern European Jews in America, all subverting our country in the exact same way, all throughout every aspect of the every institution, whether you're talking about the media, academia, and government, everywhere they go, like in unison, in lockstep, all working towards the same goal. I wonder if that is also heritable. I wonder. Yeah, so Franz Boas here, he started working at Columbia University, and he became the architect of cultural relativism. Cultural relativism, where everything is, you know, not one culture is not better than the other. Even if one culture has created the kind of technology that has allowed men to walk on the moon and have running water and sanitary bathrooms and dominate the world, that culture is not better. It's just different from a culture that practices cannibalism in sub-Saharan Africa. They're all exactly they're all the same good. It's just that they're different. And he also insisted that all the different races, all those differences, they not only not one's not better than the other, but all those differences existed simply because of environment. Simply because of environment, that there was nothing that was innate, there was nothing that was heritable, that people like Madison Grant and William Shockley, they were charlatans. And he would do, and it's funny because you'll hear a lot of leftists will say stuff like, All you know, like the quackery of the racial scientist that did skull measurements. He did skull measurements as part of his evidence to argue against fixed racial traits. So, I mean, look, it was before MRIs. Like, what are you going to do? So he trained an entire generation of disciples. You know, a lot of those names that he listed there. By the way, all Jewish. You know, spoiler alert. So this is Franz Boas, obviously Jewish. The next name that he listed was Melville Herskovitz. Melville Herskovitz. Well, actually, I think he listed Otto Kleinberg. Did I forget that one? I might have forgot that one. Otto Kleinberg wrote a book called The Races of Mankind in 1943, which was wartime. It was war propaganda claiming that races were all, you know, they were, it was, the differences were cultural and not biological, and trying to promote the idea that, you know, that's why we had to go kill the Nazis, because Hitler was insane. What he was saying, what, it didn't even add up to, you know, at all scientifically. But then you had Melville Herskovitz here. He's basically, funny enough, as I said, the black people weren't even the ones leading the charge here in Jackson, Mississippi. They weren't even the ones leading the charge in black studies or African studies in colleges. Melville Herskovitz is basically the godfather of African-American studies as they exist now in colleges today. And here he is to tell you exactly that, you know, race and IQ, that's... it has nothing to do with biology.
No one can deny that at the present time, the intellectual achievement of American Negro
children... Oh,
wait,
this is Otto Kleinberg. I got it mixed up. Otto Kleinberg does this, but the... I think Herskovitz is the... man, I meant... hold on. Let me look up here. Yeah, Herskovitz is the black studies guy. I put him out of order on my notes here. Herskovitz did the black study stuff. This is Otto Kleinberg. By the way, a Jewish immigrant who came to America, I believe, around the turn of the century.
No one can deny that at the present time, the intellectual achievement of American Negro children, particularly those who are from segregated schools, is lower on the average than that of white children. In our opinion, these differences in achievement can be explained by inferior educational and environmental opportunities, which may affect both the physical and mental development of the child.
You see that? It's all environment. If you were to get a black kid and just have the exact same upbringing as a white kid, then he would magically be a white kid. That's just the truth. That's the truth. Look, if you don't believe me, ask the Speaker of the House, who adopted a black kid who's, I think, in prison right now, isn't he? Or I know who has had a lot of legal trouble. Weirdly, his white kids haven't had the same trouble. It's a little strange. A little bit strange. Lived in the same household, you would think. You would think it'd be the same. So they were always beating this drum. Which, by the way, even if that was the case... Even if that was the case, because behavior is heritable, they're being raised by parents whose parenting behavior is heritable. So if they're being raised by black parents and that's what's fucking them up, that's also a product of biology, because it's the biology of their parents that is informing and dictating, really, the behavior, the parenting behavior, that is influencing how the kid turns out. So even if it was, look, I'm sure to some degree it is environment, right? No one's saying it's 0% environment. But these guys are saying it's 0% genetics.
We've heard claims that Negro children don't do as well as white children on intelligence tests, even when they come from the same environment. But are there environments...
Ah, look at that. They had to recognize the same thing that I just mentioned. We actually do have studies that show that when they're raised in the same environment, they turn out differently. So they have to address that.
But are their environments ever the same? Part of a Negro child's environment is the social expectation that he will not do as well as the white child. This in itself affects his motivation and achievement.
Oh, wow. Well, listen to that. Even if their environment is exactly the same, it's really not. It's really not the same.
It sounds Talmudic.
I know, it does. It's really not exactly the same because they are expected to do worse, and your lowered expectation for the blacks is what's making them actually do worse. It's still your fault, Whitey. It's still your fault. And by the way, this is kind of really what a lot of boomers even today would believe. I mean, even that not that long ago, you had George Bush, right? That line about the soft bigotry of lowered expectations. That's what he was talking about. Look, there should be lowered expectations because there were lower abilities. You shouldn't expect, that's the whole point, is you shouldn't expect the same results out of black people that you expect out of white people. That's the whole point. You shouldn't expect, and it's not just black people, they're just the topic of tonight, but you shouldn't expect the same results from people of any two groups. Different groups create and maintain different civilizations. And that's what you should expect. And by the way, this isn't like some Schrodinger's cat thing. It's not like your expectation is affecting the outcome. Your expectation is just common sense. And so they have to come up with all this fucking retarded Talmudic reasoning as to why it's still your fault.
Discussing whether or not there are differences between Negro and white children in their performance on intelligence tests, we must remember that this is by no means the only factor which influences school achievement. For example, as Negro parents become convinced that their children will no longer be restricted by discrimination to inferior jobs, they will encourage their children to take schooling much more seriously. This, in time, will certainly improve their school performance.
Oh, really? Will it? Will it? Because you said this in the 1950s, has it? Or has it gotten worse, actually? So this is the fucking bullshit that was getting the airtime. People like Putnam, they were being panned by the press, being called racist. And in fact, there was a whole lot of suppression going on. The suppression in the Soviet Union, in fact, by the anthropologist there, led to you getting disappeared, which we'll talk about in a moment. So then we had Gene Weltfisch, obviously another Jew, and co-wrote The Races of Mankind. And then we had Ashley Montagu, who we've talked about a little bit in the past. Real name, Israel Ehrenberg. Changed his name to sound like a fancy goy name before going into Western civilization and trying to undermine them. Mostly out of some, I think, revenge motivation. I mean, even in his Wikipedia, it says, he remembered often being subjected to anti-Semitic abuse when he ventured out of his own Jewish neighborhood. He had a fucking bone to pick, and he was on a mission to destroy Western civilization, which he happened to be fairly good at. So you had the Boaz group, and it's, look, and the funny thing is, people might think to themselves, wait, is this like the Frankfurt School? No, that's like just more Jews from, you know, more Eastern European immigrant Jews. It's just more of them doing the same shit. The Boaz group is something completely different. Now, you could say they're kissing cousins in the broader war against white civilization that Jews have been waging. But Franz Boas and his crew, you know, Ehrenberg, Herskovitz, and, you know, the rest of them, were the anthropologists. They were doing the scientific side of things. Now, they had everything covered. They had people placed in, like, every important, influential position when it came to molding the minds of white Americans. And these guys just happened to be the ones occupying those scientific spots. And so they were obsessed with tearing down the prior understanding of race and IQ and just race generally. Whereas the Frankfurt School, you know, that was more Adorno, Horkheimer, Marcuse. You know, they started in Germany in the 1920s. So Boas was in America by then. And they worked at the Institute for Social Research. And then they came to America in the 1930s and started cooking up the, you know, critical race theory stuff that we've got today. So they were giving it to us from every direction, which, again, like I said, is another argument for Jewish behavior. Well, like white behavior is genetic. And last, look, if Jews want to argue with me on this and say it's not genetic, you know what you're saying? You're saying there is a conspiracy then. Because there's no way this is a coincidence. So which is it? Which is it? Is it actually... I mean, you're telling me that's a trope. Is it actually this big conspiracy to take down Western civilization with all these players working in tandem? Or is it just simply your behavior is genetic and you can't help yourselves? Which is it? It's one or the other. Because it's not just some freak accident, I can tell you that much. So, you know, there was overlap with the Frankfurt School. You know, they both hated the natural order. You know, they both peddled ideas in order specifically to weaken and destroy white identity. Boas was denying race. Frankfurt was just trashing the culture. And, you know, it's just, you know, meanwhile, Hollywood is promoting the same ideas. All the media was promoting the same ideas. It's kind of weird, right? Anyway, let's continue.
The Boas group, in America at least, was the beginning of the environmental ideology as far as science was concerned. Russia made its contribution in Lysenko, who claimed that wheat could be turned into rye, and these men drew to them other scientists with leftist inclinations in Europe and throughout the United States. They built up quite a clique at Harvard and Columbia and other universities here and abroad.
All right, so he's talking about Trofim Lysenko. We've talked about him. We were talking about the fox breeding experiment. We did that stream where they had to do it in secret because the official position of the Soviet government was that genetics was bullshit, because for the same reason, you can't have communism. If that's another reason why they needed everyone to think that everyone was the same, because communism relies on that. Communism relies on the idea that we're all the same, and if we're not, then it doesn't work. So the Bolsheviks purged all of the scientists that believed in genetics. Like they literally, any scientist that refused to renounce genetics, they were fired, put in prison camps. Thousands of them of their scientists were put in prison camps, and several of them were sentenced to death as enemies of the state for believing in genetics. And this dipshit here, he didn't even learn how to read till he was 13 years old. Then they put him in charge of, the foundation of modern inheritance science. Oh wait, hold on. He was trying to find his official title. He was basically the head of the scientists for the Communist Party to some degree. He ran like the research labs, or at least oversaw the research labs. And in fact, even idea, he's probably at least somewhat responsible for a lot of the starvation that was going on. Because, for example, he promised higher crop yields because you know, everything's environment, right? And this guy, remember, this guy didn't learn to read till he was 13. He was this Ukrainian. I don't think he's a Jew, but he was the guy the Jews picked to be in charge. He was this utter fucking moron, and he was told that everything was environment and that genetics was bullshit. So he came up with this idea that if you planted seeds close together, like if you had one seed of a plant that grew well under cold conditions, and then you had another plant that didn't grow well in cold conditions, that if you planted them right next to each other, that the plant that could resist the cold would teach the other plant to resist the cold. And that way we would have, you know, cold resistant wheat. Like they literally, it was that level of stupid that was going on that led to a lot of the famine and starvation shit that was going on in the Soviet Union, because they put all their scientists that believed in genetics and race and IQ in gulags and killed them. That's literally what happened. So the famine in 1946 to 47 that killed up to 1.5 million people, a lot of it was because of this dipshit. So, and as a result, because they refused to believe in genetics, in fact, that lasted, I think, till like the 1970s in the Soviet Union, they were way fucking behind in that field of science because it was against the communist worldview. So, anyway, that's why he mentioned Lysenko, because he was their guy. He was their guy in the Soviet Union. And in fact, well, we'll get into that in a moment. They later used Soviet scientists to try to bolster this appearance of a scientific consensus on the topic of environmentalism, as he puts it, by using Soviet scientists where if they said they didn't believe in it, they'd go to the gulag or get shot into a grave.
As the New Deal came along and we went further left in the United States, they fitted in with the climate. In fact, they became the dominant academic power. It wasn't long before they were able to dictate policy. And eventually, a whole generation of American young people were delivered into their hands.
That generation is the boomers. He keeps saying they. If you're waiting for him to be explicit about the Jews, he's not going to do it. It's very disappointing. We'll get back to that later. But it's obvious that he knows, because he's naming all these Jews. And he'll use euphemisms. But unfortunately, which goes counter to his own advice, that you need to be explicit about what you want, because if you're on the side of right and of truth and of righteousness, then you should be honest about what you want. You shouldn't be ashamed of what you're saying. And so he's not exactly saying it, but he's saying it. He's saying, look, all these people got into positions of power and influence, and we handed our young people to them, and they educated an entire generation of fucking retards, which is the boomers. And those are the people who were embracing all of this anti-science about race.
Now, persecution of scientists who disagreed with them became one of their techniques. In Russia, of course, this was easy. Scientists who contradicted Lysenko were simply arrested. In the so-called free world, the matter had to be handled a bit more subtly. It will be apparent to you that I can't here tonight name names. I prove my point by being unable in this case to prove it. It's because there is a risk of persecution that I can't call specific witnesses. But I can cite cases, and I can ask that you accept my word for their genuineness. So I'll mention the Southern anthropologist who wrote me using such terms as avoidance and suppression and discouragement of research. I will cite the Northern sociologist who, having made a statement on the non-equalitarian side, went back to his university and was told, "We won't fire you, that would be too obvious, but as long as you stay here, you will never get a promotion, and you'll never get a raise in pay." I'll mention the Middle Western psychologist who wrote me, "Now, where in the United States could a psychologist, sociologist, or anthropologist find work if he openly espoused the theory of racial inequality?" I'll mention my experience with one of the world's most distinguished anthropologists who asked me, after I had seated myself in his living room in a northern city, "Are you sure you haven't been followed?" And I'll add still another scientist who said, "I can't commit academic suicide. I still have work to do. But when I retire..."
And unfortunately, that's the same game we see getting played right now. All of these fucking MAGA traitors, all these people who won't mention Jews, they all say the same thing. "Well, if I talked about Jews, then I'd be out of a job. Well, I can try to do the good that I can now, or maybe after I get my bag, then I'll start talking about the Jews." All these cowards. All these cowards that are unable to just directly talk about the actual problem, therefore guaranteeing that it never gets fucking solved. And that's the game they've been playing for decades, you could say centuries. Intimidation. Silver or lead? What do you want, silver or lead? Now, unfortunately, there's a lot of Shabbos goys out there that gladly accept the silver.
I'd like to turn to the Northern Press, to the Northern Television and Radio and Broadcasting Networks, and ask them, "Now, what do you think of this business?" I'd like to ask Luce and Jackson of Time and Life and Dreyfus and Sulzberger of the New York Times, how much longer are you going to vilify the South on the basis of evidence spawned under these conditions? Do you call this academic freedom? And if we don't have academic freedom, what kind of freedom do we have?
So he mentions that none of the, this is before the internet, obviously. You want to know how boomers turned out the way that they did. And this is why I did have a lot of anger towards boomers. It's less so now. I have more understanding now, I think. They just didn't have any kind of exposure to this information at all, like 0%. Everyone was telling them the same thing. He mentioned the press. He's like, "I wonder why the Northern Press doesn't talk." Well, I got some answers for you. At the time, in 1961, NBC, the head of NBC, the president of NBC, was Robert Sarnoff, a Jewish immigrant from Russia. So another Jewish immigrant from Eastern Europe who came here around the turn of the century. And David Sarnoff, the chairman, who also obviously Jewish immigrant from Russia. CBS. The chairman of CBS was William S. Paley, Jewish born to Ukrainian immigrants that came here to America around the turn of the century. ABC, Leonard Goldenson, who was president of ABC, Jewish. I'm not sure when his family came here, but he was initially from Pennsylvania. And then, of course, you had, and you mentioned the Sulzbergers over at the, you know, New York Times, Arthur Hayes Sulzberger, who was the publisher of the New York Times. And then you had Hedley Donovan, the editorial director of Time Life. That's who he was talking about, Time Life, who wasn't a Jew, but was an Irish Catholic. Because, unfortunately, the Catholics were also very pro-desegregation, pro-civil rights, and pro-immigration. So they were hand in glove with this stuff at the time.
I have to say to you editors who are the servants of northern masters that I'd rather quit my job than betray the people in my hometown. I'd rather die poor than mislead my neighbors about something that's as important as this. I'd rather do almost anything than corrupt the thinking of a father and mother across the street. Men who will do that sort of thing are in the same class with the businessmen who favor integration because they fear resistance may hurt their pocketbooks. I wouldn't want to sell my descendants' future for 30 pieces of silver, but there's no accounting for taste these days.
Or these days. Unfortunately, lots of people are more than willing to sell their descendants down the road for 30 pieces of silver. And look, this is exactly why I do what I do. I've told you guys I could make a lot more money by not talking about this stuff. I had connections in the MAGA movement back when I was just making, you know, based Pepe the Frog memes, making fun of Hillary and talking about the Trump train. I could have chose the silver. But as he said, I wouldn't be able to live with myself. I would rather do this, and even if we don't win this fight, I'll be happy going to the grave knowing I at least wasn't making it worse.
The followers of Boaz had no difficulty, for instance, in capturing the United Nations, because it goes without saying that at the United Nations, the wish-fulfilling attraction of the environmentalist doctrine reached its height. You might expect committees to be set up at the UN to prove all sorts of equalitarian doctrines, and that's precisely what you do find. You find it most noticeably in the UNESCO, that's the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, of 1950 and 1951 on the subject of race. Signed by a long list of scientists, which is flaunted in the faces of the North at all times. The first statement in 1950 was signed by Kleinberg, Montague, and Myrdal, the Swedish socialist. We don't find weltfish, by a man named Ginsburg for England and Levi Strauss for France. Juan Comas signed for Mexico, and there will be more to say about him in just a moment. You may wonder why it was found advisable to issue a second statement so soon after the first one. The published reason was that some of the contentions in the first statement and some of the terms used were, quote, much criticized, especially by physical anthropologists and geneticists, end quote. Now, they're the ones, of course, that know the most about this subject. Then we read, they, the scientific critics of the first statement, also declined to acknowledge as a proved fact that there are no mental differences between racial groups, and stressed that there was insufficient evidence to support that view, end quote. So they issued a second statement in 1951, which carried water on both shoulders a little better and made it possible to bring a few more signatures under the tent.
Now, this is what he's talking about. UNESCO is, it's trust the science goy. It's trust the science goy. The UN brought together a bunch of Jewish scientists, and they wrote this statement basically saying exactly what Boaz says, that all racial differences are a matter of culture, of environment. that has nothing to do with genetics whatsoever, and the science is settled, Goy. Trust the science. And the high trust society white people were like, well, there you go. The science is in. And back then there was no internet. There was no comment section. There was no anything. So you had the television telling you that there were no differences between the races. You had the Hollywood movies telling you there were no differences between races. You had the radio telling you there were no differences between races. You had your clergy telling you that there were no differences between races. You had your professors telling you there were no differences between races. You even had the children's books that you were reading in kindergarten all the way through high school saying there were no differences between races. And the UN. So everyone was saying the exact same thing, and there was no alternative view aside, unless you were present in that hotel in Mississippi in 1961, unless you were a member of that audience, you weren't hearing this.
Now let me give you an example. On one page we find this sentence, and I quote it to you. Available scientific knowledge provides no basis for believing that the groups of mankind differ in their innate capacity for intellectual and emotional development. End quote. Now, on the page directly opposite, we read, quote, it's possible, though not proved, that some types of innate capacity for intellectual and emotional responses are commoner in one group than another. End quote. Now, is it surprising that the president of one of the scientific societies most concerned with this subject wrote me a few weeks ago, the two contradictory statements invalidate the whole thing.
So they use a bunch of Talmudic language in their statement, contradicting themselves, which makes the document nonsensical. But even if it was consistent, it's still a pack of fucking lies, signed mostly by Jews and by Soviets that if they don't agree with it, they go to the gulag.
Remember that public opinion in the North doesn't have a chance to analyze the situation as we're analyzing it here. All they are given is the propaganda that they've got in this equalitarian statement. All they get is a general impression of agreement.
See, the science is settled. So what he's trying to explain to these Southerners that are puzzled as to why the North is so aggressively trying to force them to integrate, he's saying, look, they think that you're going against the settled science. They think that you are just being mean-spirited. It's all a myth. That race, that there's, you know, different races. And look, if you watch the Andrew Cuomo Tucker interview, you see a lot of that bullshit still exists in the minds of many people today.
It's not a coincidence that people of color, specifically African American, are at a different socioeconomic level given how they were introduced to the country. Right? Because race is completely fabricated. There is no such thing as race.
Well,
we made it up.
I don't even know what you're talking about. What do you mean
cut open a black guy and a white guy, their genetics are the same.
That's okay.
We made race.
I don't know what you're
talking about. We made race. We made it. We made it a thing. Just because you look different doesn't mean you're different species. So created it.
Hold on. No one's saying anyone's a different species.
I'm not saying that you are. I'm saying that
I think we may be getting into science a little too deep.
I'm saying the science is very simple. Right? So we created race. And
Wait, I don't know what you're talking about. So you're saying that there are no differences between the races? So for example, the genetic predisposition to certain diseases is fake?
There are ethnic pockets, right? So Italians have certain things that are more common because of that group of animals breeding with each other than you'll have with Irish people or with Polish people. Sure. And then as they all mix,
it changes. Oh, so you do acknowledge genetics is real?
Of course genetics is real.
Okay, so
genetics is everything. What I'm saying is that race.
Whoa!
What I'm saying
is
that race.
Genetics is everything, but race is fake.
Race is a social construct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, race is a social construct in some ways.
Yeah.
But there's no doubt that there are significant. No, I don't. I mean,
look, first Irish all, I think, and Italians are different cultures, right? But they're the same people. They're just different cultures, speak different ways, eat different
things.
They're
not the same people. They don't look the same, and they're not genetically the same. That's not true.
They are genetically the same.
Well, that's untrue. It's factually untrue. And you can see it in all kinds of ways. What's the percentage of redheads in Sicily? Pretty high?
I doubt it.
Okay. So what you're saying doesn't make any
sense
at all.
But that doesn't mean it's genetics. It's just where people decide to be.
No, hair color is determined by genetics. It's not a cultural construct.
I know, but I'm saying that having...
and neither is height or eye color or IQ.
Having
sorry.
More redheads in Italy is not just about genetics. It's about where people populate, right? Like you could take a hue, like look at Sicily, right? Look at the history of Sicily. When North Africa winds up being there, right, and in power, you wind up having that mixed into the chemistry of everybody who's Sicilian.
Because genetics are real. That's exactly right.
But race as a thing, we created.
So this fucking mozzarella muli here. Oh, man. Oh, this fucking spaghetti spick. Tortellini Tyrone over here. Oh, Jesus Christ. all jokes aside, this is what a lot of people think. This is what a lot of people fucking think. It's like, you can tell, like, he doesn't even understand that there's a giant fucking obvious contradiction here. And look, it is a little encouraging, even though Tucker's totally CIA. It is a little encouraging that it's so mainstream now that Tucker has to push back on that. Now, all throughout this same interview, Tucker race cucks like as predictable. You know, he's constantly saying, "Well, I don't even care about race. Well, what even is white, really? You know, he's super against actually solving the problem. It's just that he can't. They need to avoid you coming to this conclusion. Oh, so the answer is racial solidarity. They need you to they now know that this cat is out of the bag, right? He knows how stupid Cuomo sounds. So he can't be part of that. He can't, if you want to keep trusting Tucker, he can't let you think that he's part of that. But he also can't let you come to the logical conclusion then. The logical conclusion then, if genes play such a big role, then maybe racial identity, there's something to that. Maybe that's why our country has gone to shit. And again, he's also very explicit that it's just IQ. All these other behaviors that are very important when it comes to whether or not you can maintain a civilization or what the character of that civilization will be or you know, what to expect the destiny of that civilization to be. How dependent that is also on genes. He needs you to avoid that. And just think about it in terms of IQ. Because if you think about it in terms of IQ, and that's all, if that's where it stops, well, then all of a sudden, it's not a big deal if we have all these other immigrants and all these kinds of people in our country that aren't like you, as long as their IQ is high enough. Because that's the only thing that matters. It's this new, it's a shift that they've been forced to make. The approved mainstream right wing is focusing so hard on this race blind meritocracy, and Tucker explicitly promotes that all throughout this fucking interview. Because it limits it to just IQ. That means that Asians with high IQs are interchangeable with white people, and that there won't be anything lost by that, or Indians or anyone else that you can get, as long as their IQ is comparable to that of a white person. Jews, obviously, they can be represented in positions of great influence and power because they have high IQs. And that's all that matters. But unfortunately, there's still a lot of people that are in the Cuomo camp where they can't even fucking wrap their head around that.
The situation would be bad enough if we had only to deal with these left-wing pseudoscientists. But we're faced with something else. Out of the scientific cloisters exudes a doctrine which seeps into the churches, into the press, into the movies, other mass media, until all the instruments for molding public opinion are corrupted.
Again, I really wish that he was a little more clearer about the particular group behind this, because that matters. That matters. We need to be precise. We need to be precise. When people say, I'm tired of hearing about Jews, well, I'll be tired of hearing about Jews when Tucker Carlson is talking about Jews and the role that they play. But until then, we have to keep pushing. And until then, when you tell me that, you're the same as the motherfuckers that were telling Jared Taylor in the 1990s, let's all just get along and don't be a racist. Let's just get along. You're literally that same dumb boomer that Jared Taylor was having to deal with in the 1990s. If you're not willing to face the role that Jews have been playing in this destruction of our civilization.
Now, let me give you a rather startling illustration. In my hand, I hold a pamphlet written by one Father C.J. McNaspy, S.J., Society of Jesuits. It bears the Nihil Obstat of Austin B. Vaughan, Doctor of Sacred Theology, the imprimatur of Francis Cardinal Spellman, and we're told that these things guarantee the pamphlet's freedom from moral error. It's called Let's Talk Sense About the Negro. Yet on page 14, we find these two sentences. If some Negroes show tendencies toward delinquency, if they suffer from lack of ambition, lack of drive, apathy, we may blame this on the environment we have compelled them to live in, not on some imagined inferiority in their biology. This is not my opinion. It is the conviction of all scientific psychologists and anthropologists. End quote.
And again, not just the Jews, but the Catholics. The Catholics were very pro-civil rights. When I was doing research for this, trying to find articles, I just randomly came across this article about the Pope in 1950, I think it was like 58 or 59, complaining about racism in America and the civil rights being denied the blacks in America. So this is, and once again, he was mentioning when he wrote his book, some of the big pushback was from the Catholics. Because, look, I know there's base Catholics out there. I'm not saying there's not, but it's like, you got it. it's just fact. It's just the history. The history of the civil rights movement included Catholics, and not just Catholics either. It was Christians across the board. Because I think now he mentions, and he was Episcopalian, this guy, and so was Tucker, by the way. And I think that's the criticism he got, or that's the next one he cites.
Or take this article by the Episcopal Bishop of Michigan, June 4th of this year. It's an attack on race and reason in the Detroit News, in which the bishop, one Richard Emmerich, brings Abraham Lincoln into the argument, and notice the way he does it. He says, Abraham Lincoln's clear mind can lead us to see the heart of this struggle, which is still America's chief agony. The bishop doesn't pause to consider who started this most recent agony. The logic of segregation, discrimination, or exclusion leads to the destruction of all civil liberties everywhere. Why? Because, says one man writing about Lincoln, The essence of his position was that the principle of exclusion has no inner check, that arbitrarily barring one minority from the exercise of its rights can be both a precedent and a moral sanction for barring another, and that it creates a frame of mind from which no one can expect justice or security. End quote. Now, to examine the minor error in this thing first, am I correct in my recollection that our American Republic has been in existence since 1787? That between that time and 1954, we've grown from very small beginnings to be the leading free society of the world. And that during all of that time, we had segregated schools in the South. And if I am correct in my recollection, I would like to ask Bishop Emmerich what he means when he says, the logic of segregation leads to the destruction of all civil liberties everywhere.
And that's the other big point that we need to be hammering home, especially to the boomers, people that all want to say that, oh, we should go back to the 1950s, the 1960s. That was peak civilization for America. Well, guess what, motherfucker? How did we get to that peak civilization with segregation if segregation was so bad? If segregation was such an evil, might I add, support for Israel wasn't a thing back then either because it didn't exist. Funny how for centuries, America was exceptional in its ability to build a civilization that became the envy of the world, that brought people from all around the world. Everyone wanted to come to America because of the civilization that we built. And somehow we reached the pinnacle of that civilization while practicing segregation. Hell, by practicing slavery. By conducting our country in a way that put white people's needs first, displacing the Native Americans. All these things that we did that were so evil, somehow those were all stepping stones to the pinnacle of our civilization. And yet somehow that's going to lead to our destruction. Well, I don't know. It seems like we've been on a fairly steady decline since changing our ways at the behest of Jewish intellectuals. Seems like we were kind of doing things the right way. Until we started listening to the Jewish intellectuals. And now everyone's trying to figure out what's wrong and they need to fix it. And what do? They elect the people who are owned by and support fully the Jewish intellectuals. Saying that's just a minor cost. That's the price we have to pay. We have to bend the knee to the Jews, and maybe they'll let us be racist against blacks. Maybe they'll let us kick some Muslims out. Please, sir, can we kick out some Muslims? They hate Israel. Please, sir, can we stop the mass immigration at the southern border? It's having a negative effect on the economy. The whole time, what's missing? What's missing is an explicit advocation of your sovereignty. You can't even get someone that can say white people, let alone support white sovereignty. And even when you get someone like Tucker, that giggling buffoon, to at least throw you a bone by saying the obvious, that race and IQ are connected, he does so only when it's stitched in between saying things that are demeaning and dismissive to the idea of white sovereignty or solidarity or even consciousness.
You notice he talks about Lincoln's clear mind, and then he phrases matters in such a way that you get the impression that what he quotes next is practically a citation from Lincoln on segregation. Actually, Emmerich's words are, says one man writing about Lincoln, the essence of his position was, and so forth. Certainly, I don't have to tell this audience what Lincoln actually said about the Negro. I am not, nor ever have been, in favor of bringing about, in any way, the social and political equality of the white and black races. Not true, that was in 1858.
There's one of many quotes from Lincoln, and that's from 1858, saying that he is not in favor of granting the Negro the same kinds of rights or citizenship that white people have. So for those of you who Lincoln's a Republican, Base Lincoln. Okay. Well, Base Lincoln wanted to send all the black people back to Africa. And maybe we would have if he hadn't been shot in the head. Possibly by a Jew. We've covered that before.
I'd now like to address myself to the clergy, and to them I'd like to say, there's been no case in history where whites and blacks have integrated without destruction of the white civilization. And there is no human right greater than the right of a civilization to defend itself against such destruction. That right you would watch the federal government take forcibly from the South while you sit with your hands folded in prayer. I'm tired of empty phrases with no thought behind them. I'm tired of the sort of combined ignorance and stupidity shown by your McNaspies and your Emmerichs. I'm tired of your timid conformity with a popular drift. And finally, I'm tired of your milk and water suggestions that we pass the responsibility to God while you support a policy which forces the white children of the South, against the wishes of their parents, into associations they understand better than you do. You pose as idealists, yet you hide behind the skirts of religion while you condone the crime against 50 million Americans.
I want to play that bit again. This is him speaking directly to all the bleeding heart Christians in America. They were shitting all over the South, saying those evil racists down there in the South, why won't they just, don't they understand we're all God's children? Don't they understand? We're all the same. Just like the communists. They know too. Just listen to the communist Jews, says the Christians up north. I want you to listen to this again, because every word that he says applies 1,000% to all these fucking race cut Christians today.
I'd now like to address myself to the clergy, and to them I'd like to say, there's been no case in history where whites and blacks have integrated without destruction of the white civilization. And there is no human right greater than the right of a civilization to defend itself against such destruction. That right you would watch the federal government take forcibly from the South while you sit with your hands folded in prayer. I'm tired of empty phrases with no thought behind them. I'm tired of the sort of combined ignorance and stupidity shown by your McNaspies and your Emmerichs. I'm tired of your timid conformity with a popular drift. And finally, I'm tired of your milk and water suggestions that we pass the responsibility to God while you support a policy which forces the white children of the South against the wishes of their parents, into associations they understand better than you do. You pose as idealists, yet you hide behind the skirts of religion while you condone a crime against 50 million Americans.
And there it is. And unfortunately, like I said, that was the match made in hell. The Christian clergy jumped right on board with this stuff. It wasn't just the Catholics. It was most of the major religions.
Now, there are two things in this state of affairs that I want to stress. One is that the environmental ideology is false, or better still to say, perhaps, that it's the worst kind of a half-truth which can do more damage than a fallacy. The second thing is that, nevertheless, this fallacy, this half-truth, has gained complete possession of the northern and western mind. Some, perhaps many, of the leaders in our press, our clergy, our entertainment, our colleges and our politics may recognize the fallacy, and either through timidity or cupidity are pressing on with it just the same. But my experience has satisfied me that the great majority of Northerners are simply misled. I'm talking now of the inarticulate masses of the people who only speak at the polls. The scientists, the educators, the editors, and the churchmen make it easy for Northern politicians, who nowadays would much prefer to do what they think a misinformed public wants than to take the trouble to inform them properly.
And that is the situation. That's why you have so many people who know it's easier to just tell people what they want to hear. It pays better. The two dangers are that A, there are racial differences, and that it's more insidious, this saying that it's all environment, that it's a half-truth, because obviously it's not 100%. Nothing's 100% genetic. So this half-truth, it's more dangerous than a fallacy. But the other danger is all of the leadership in the country, all the Shabbos goys, all the MAGAtards out there are willing to lie because it pays better. And it's easier. And you can be more successful. We have leaders now that have learned that if the public is stupid, it's actually easier to gain and retain power. Because all you have to do is tell them what they want to hear. He's saying we don't have the actual real leaders who instead should be educating people as to how things are and not how they want them to be. And that's true leadership. I think he then goes on to talk about Teddy Roosevelt, who he wrote a biography on, so I'm assuming that's who he's referencing.
I'm reminded by contrast of a comment that was made on the duty of statesmanship by quite a different kind of a leader a generation ago. This leader remarked, "People used to say that I was an astonishingly good politician, because I divined what the people were going to think. This really was not an accurate way of stating the case. I did not divine how the people were going to think. I made up my mind what they ought to think, and then did my best to get them to think it." If we had leaders of that kind today, we wouldn't be in this mess.
We don't have leaders like that. And it's because, quite frankly, it's because our civilization is, it's in a death spiral, and that's not what it rewards when you're in a death spiral. Just like people wonder why, for example, here's a good example. I was watching this video. You knew I'd sneak bees in here somewhere. I was watching this video. It was an interview with these big-time commercial beekeepers up north. I think they're up north. And these are all Trump-supporting farmer types, right? They make comments that lead you to... I mean, it's not like... It wasn't tough to divine whether or not these were, you know, MAGA-tard, conservatard boomers. And then, inexplicably, or not so much, they start talking about how their big honey operation, and by big, I mean these motherfuckers don't have hundreds of hives. They've got 20,000 beehives in their honey business. 20,000. They have so many hives, they use the H-2 visas. H-2 visas. They literally bring people in from South Africa, like NIGs from South Africa. They fly them in to America and have them work their bee operation, their honey operation. And then they fly him back at the end of the season. Some, of course, sneak off, overstay their visa, whatever. And they were actually complaining. They were complaining that Biden was making it harder for them to get these H-2 visa people. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, these are all these old white guys wearing the trucker hats, wearing their Wrangler shirts tucked into their Wrangler jeans with their big belt buckle, sitting on fold-up patio chairs on this porch, talking about the agriculture industry and how the country has gone to hell. They complain about Biden was delaying. One of the reasons our honey crop's a little behind is Biden delayed our H-2 visa guys. And when the person interviewing them very timidly hinted that, like, that was odd that they wanted, you know, foreign workers working their hives, foreign workers from Africa to be flown in to work their hives, they immediately did what I've seen even here locally from ranchers. They said the exact same thing. Well, we have to do that or we can't stay in business. We have to do this or we won't be able to stay in business. We won't be able to compete. We have to throw our civilization away or we won't be able to compete. No, the real answer is, no, if you paid white people, if you paid Americans to do the jobs that you're apparently, it's, look, I don't know how much it costs to fly in a bunch of Africans and then pay for them to live on your farm, because that's part of the deal. They pay room and board and give them a salary. And there's minimum, I don't know what the minimum wage is through that visa program, but they have them. There are minimum wages that you can pay. But if that's somehow cheaper for you to do, maybe you shouldn't have 20,000 fucking hives. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe, yeah, you can't compete with 20,000 fucking hives on that scale. Maybe you do need to go down to an amount of business that you can actually manage yourself, or manage with your family, or manage with local people, or drop your profits down a little bit. But that doesn't even enter their minds. Because in the late stage capitalist society that we live in right now, especially when you live in a country that has no national identity, the only thing that factors into the minds of these people is what's going to be most profitable. Oh, if I poison the food, I can make frozen pizzas for 5 cents less a pop? if we add this, if we take away real cheese and put like this weird soy extract that's kind of like cheese, if we put that on the pizza, we'll save 5 cents a pizza. And we're selling these millions of pizzas. That's like a lot of money. You know, if we start using industrial lubricant instead of animal fats, then that'll help out. Okay, that'll lower the price too. Well, then let's fucking do it, because that's really the only thing that you consider. It's like that scene in Fight Club when they're talking about the car executives. When they find something that's dangerous with their car, then they know, they do the math, and they know it's going to lead to fatalities. And they do the math and figure out that a recall would actually cost more than whatever legal settlement would result from the fatalities that are inevitable. And so they choose not to do the recall because it's cheaper to just settle with whoever dies, their family. And so they just don't do it. Because they don't give a fuck about the consumer, because it's just some rando. It's not someone. You'd make different decisions about what you feed your family. Like, I guarantee you, these executives that are making this bullshit goy slop, that's not the shit they feed their family. And when you stop having a nation of people, when you stop being a people, when you're just a group of international vagabonds staying at the same fucking hotel, no one gives a fuck. It's just what, at that point, it's whatever you can get away with. Which, by the way, is exactly what happens when you start to have these immigrants in positions of power, and that includes Elon Musk. They have no tie to the blood. They have no tie to the soil. And they'll tell you that. They explicitly tell you that. The Charlie Kirks of the world will explicitly tell you that. But that's what's so great about America, in fact. The Tucker Carlsons of the world will tell you that. That's what's so great about America. That America is essentially just one big long episode of Dancing with the Stars, and whoever dances the best, they win. It's just a big fucking talent show, and you should just practice your talent. Everyone's a competitor. You're not a family. You're not a people. You're not a community. Gee, I wonder if that view of the world is compatible with what Putnam terms as environmentalism. I wonder if that was a necessary ingredient for a people to get to that point of deracination. I wonder if that was a necessary ingredient. And I wonder if that's why people like Charlie Kirk, people like Tim Pool, a man with no race, people like Tucker Carlson, I wonder if that's why they want to keep it that way. If the only way you succeed in this country is by being the biggest fucking psychopath, willing to fuck over the most people without getting caught, which is exactly what it is today, I wonder what would happen. I wonder how good that strategy would work. If the white people of this country viewed themselves as a people, as a family.
We have in the North a great body of public opinion hypnotized by the belief that all the Negro's limitations are environmental, that the only reason he does not appear to be the white man's equal in every respect is because the white man has forced him into an inferior environment, has held him back, as they say.
Chris Cuomo literally said exactly that, like used that exact term.
Not only in the United States, but also in Africa. Once you accept that idea, it follows logically that white men ought in justice and morality to take every possible step by way of restitution to correct the environment, even at the expense of disadvantage to themselves. Now, over the last several years, I've talked or corresponded with thousands of sincere, intelligent Americans and have found this point of view almost universal. I don't think you here realize how this side of the question counts up there. I've had it repeated often enough so that I can assure you it permeates our northern society as a whole. They read an occasional book on science, the books that are kept at the front of the bookstores. There they find the environmentalist view. They go to a movie and they get it there. On Sundays they hear it preached in church. When they turn on TV, they hear news and documentaries and plays all slanted in the same direction. Their children come home from school with books written by environmentalists. I could go on forever. The point is, you have a completely indoctrinated society in the North. On that indoctrination, the integration movement rests. It gives it all the sanctions of a moral crusade. It makes it shine like the Holy Grail. And what's the South doing about it? Just talking almost exclusively about states' rights.
So he's explaining to the Southerners, look, and this applies today too, and if not more, he's saying the entire North and the West generally is brainwashed to believe that this is a great moral injustice, that because we're all the same, because of this environmentalism that permeates throughout the culture, whether it's at the movie theater, at home, watching television, in the pews at church, everywhere they go, they're surrounded by this propaganda that we're all the fucking same. And so that all the differences that happen between the blacks and the whites, well, it has to be because of something that you're doing. And if it's something that you're doing, well, then it's on you to try to fix it. And so it becomes a moral crusade. We have to fix this. This is why boomers would get so fucking and still do get so fucking excited when they come across the based black guy. This is exactly why that happens. I was looking for where is it? God damn it. I was looking for the Alex Jones saying, here it is.
I had a lot of black friends, by the way, and played football and everything.
There we go. That's what it is. That's why they get so excited. Because it's finally, for the first time, it's even if it's not, it's perceived as some kind of confirmation that this bullshit lie they've been believing forever, finally, it's being validated. Finally, it's being validated. See, we're not so different. We're not so different. Look, they like Trump. Look at those silly Negroes over there. They like Trump. Thank God. I was starting to think this was all a lie. And if it was all a lie, what would that mean? Oh God, that'd be awful if it was a lie. That would mean that we've been running our entire civilization for a century on the premise of a lie. That would be catastrophic. And worse yet, that would imply that some of that responsibility would rest on my shoulders for believing the lie, for perpetuating the lie, for teaching my children the lie. So he's trying to explain to this Southern audience, look, you don't know how bad it is up there. Everyone believes this lie, and they're chomping at the bit to be Captain Save-A-Nigger. That's what they want to do. They're all salivating at the thought of a based black friend. And you guys are talking about states' rights. That's not going to sell. You don't know what you're up against. States' rights. First of all, that's not even really what this is about. That's not what you're too embarrassed, or you think that maybe being honest is, because to some degree you're being affected by this exact same propaganda. It's making you feel dirty. It's making you feel like you're doing something sneaky and underhanded. It's making you feel that same guilt. So you feel like you have to lie about it by cloaking it in this boring states' rights argument. And that's not going to fly with people that think that they're literally champions for the good of the universe. States' rights, that's just some legal mumbo jumbo. They don't care about that.
Now, citizens of Mississippi, I give you this as axiomatic. The Supreme Court's decision on desegregation simply follows the trend of public opinion in the North and West. And the average man in the North and West doesn't give a damn about states' rights in the face of his belief that the South is committing a wrong against the Negro. You might as well try to use states' rights to justify mass murder. And the Northerner goes further. When you talk about states' rights, he thinks to himself, sure, the Southerner is willing to plead states' rights when he wants to browbeat and oppress the Negro. But when it comes to getting his hands in the federal treasury, he sings a different tune. In other words, this line of defense not only doesn't do you any good up north, it does you harm.
Because it's a lie. You're trying to make a legal argument for a moral problem. Because their propaganda has been so successful, it's making you doubt yourself. And if you believe, as I do, that you are on the right side, that what you're doing isn't something dirty, what you're doing has truth on its side, has righteousness on its side, has justice on its side, what you're doing is a moral imperative. Why are you trying to dress it up in states' rights? And I would say the same thing to all the people today that try to dress up all these same exact problems that still have not been resolved because no one's been courageous enough to be honest about it. You're kicking the can down the road until you can tell the truth. What are you so ashamed of? Do you really think white people deserve to have sovereignty over themselves? What's so dirty about that? If you don't advocate for what you want, but instead advocate for what you think your enemies will let you have, that's all you'll ever get. What your enemies will let you have.
In my opinion, there is just one solution now to this problem. Tell the North over and over again that you're fighting for the integrity of your civilization. Remind them that there has never been a case in history where whites and blacks have lived together without segregation in such numbers as you have in the South today, and have failed in the end to intermarry. Remind them that such intermarriage has always resulted in the deterioration of the white civilization. Point out to them that the facts of science, when viewed through unbiased eyes, support the facts of history. Show them that the historical evidence is what you would expect to find from the scientific evidence, the genetic nature of the latter accounting for the deterioration apparent in the former. Make clear that you have in most cases done all you could, and a lot more than most, to improve environment for the Negro, and that you intend to do even more. Continue forward in that area, but when it comes to social segregation, say to the North, here we stand, four square.
In other words, stop beating around the bush. Stop trying to use, like thinking you're using 4D chess by talking about states' rights. Just tell them that we're doing this to preserve our civilization, the integrity of our civilization. We don't want to sell our children down the fucking river for 30 pieces of silver. No amount of artificial guilt exacerbating propaganda is going to make me want to shit my fucking children's destiny down the fucking toilet just so I don't have to feel a little social discomfort in the face of intellectual subversive Jews.
Now, I need scarcely remark that you should prepare yourselves to meet the reflex action that you'll get from the North. I've met it so often and found it so stereotyped and superficial that it's hard to take it seriously, but it must be met. When they say to you, but you can't hold the Negro back, answer: any race that's held back by segregation is held back by associating with itself. And such a race had better do something about itself instead of demanding that another race also be held back by associating with it.
And again, it's just a simple truth. It's something there are no fucking arguments for. If separation from white people is going to hold black people back, that necessarily means association with black people is going to hold white people back. If association with yourself is holding you back, there's a problem with you. The segregation of whites from blacks doesn't have a negative effect on whites. So why is it so the other way around? And if those effects of association with oneself are so negative, well, I don't think I have to We all live in the world that resulted by integrating the blacks as if they were our equals. We all see it every day. It's not theory anymore.
Or when they suggest that your children don't have to marry Negroes just because they must go to school with them, call their attention to the gradually erosive effect of the egalitarian ideology that's implicit in this movement. Remind them that it is not solely a question of the impact on one generation, but upon a series of generations, each becoming a little less aware of what's involved. Tell them that time and familiarity, coupled with a hypnotic repetition of the egalitarian doctrine, can slowly make black seem white, and something which at first repelled seem eventually acceptable.
Gee, almost as if black culture is 100% acceptable today. Isn't that weird? It's not just acceptable, it's celebrated. The same sorts of things that would have repelled white people generations ago are embraced now. Wow, did this motherfucker have a crystal ball? A crystal ball?
Be on your guard against the leftist who is obsessed with the idea of change, who wants change just because it's fashionable, and who talks about winds of change. Remind him that every burglar who breaks into a house wants change. He wants to change the possession of the savings and heirlooms of the owner who's conserved them through the years. And sometimes nations and races want to do the same thing.
I mean, he literally just predicted Obama there. The first black president, which, by the way, a consequence of what he was saying. Something that would have been absurd in 1958, a black president? People didn't even bat an eye. In fact, many of them had that exact same boomer attitude of, oh, thank God, look, they can be presidents. I knew it was environment and not genetics.
Straighten out the North on this all men were created equal concept. Explain that that phrase has never referred to cultural, social, or genetic equality, except in communist countries. Our history is full of evidence on the point.
Yeah, this whole idea that everyone's equal and that all men are created equal. Yeah, no, it's equal under the law. And that's it. And I don't even think, honestly, I don't even think it should be that at this point. If we're going to have all these people who don't have equal capabilities, why do we apply the same laws to them? I don't think that that's not even the way the founders meant it. And by the way, when they were saying people, they meant white people. Black people were not considered people when they wrote that down. They literally weren't. They were farm equipment.
And don't let them seduce you with this notion that your image before the world will be damaged by segregation. It goes without saying that riots are damaging. But what these egalitarians are trying to tell you is that segregation itself is damaging. All you have to do is to ask them which is more important, to keep the integrity of your civilization, to conserve the traditions your forefathers developed through 1,000 years, or to please some African who thinks freedom is a package that you go down and get at the post office. Remind them that if a thing is wrong, you don't do it to please anybody.
That's right. Too many people have forgotten that. There doesn't seem to be any kind of... You know, without, here's the other thing. Without shared values, you end up with no values. Because who's if we believe in moral relativism, if what and what's right and wrong is completely subjective, then it's no wonder you end up with trans kids. Because without shared values, you end up with no values. And without shared genetics, you're never going to have shared values. That's where we need to push it to. This bending of the knee that the Tucker Carlsons of the world are doing, admitting finally that race and IQ, there's a connection there. Like, that was really fucking hard. Wow, Tucker's really smart. Yeah, okay. So figuring out the thing that literally every grade school kid knows immediately upon sharing a classroom with non-whites. Yay. Yay, thanks. Oh, look, it's like we should be giving medals to all these stupid fucking flat earthers that figured out that the earth wasn't flat because of those people that went down to Antarctica. No, you deserve to be fucking laughed at. Tucker deserves to be fucking laughed at. Oh, we should reward him for saying something based. No, we should fucking mock him for being fucking stupid enough to have ever not said that. Shared values will never exist without shared genetics. It's not just shared IQ averages. It's shared values and shared behaviors will never exist in a society that doesn't have the same genetic makeup. Putting a wheat seed next to a barley seed is not going to teach the wheat seed to be more sturdy in the winter. Putting an Africanized hive next to a European hive is not going to make their behavior any better. Doesn't matter how much you mix them up. We are a product of our biology. And people need to stop feeling guilty for winning that fucking lottery. You need to stop feeling like you owe the people who lost that fucking lottery. And you also need to be mindful of the people who pose dangers that are a little more subtle, a little less obvious than knocking you out on the subway. People with genetic traits that are way more damaging and civilization ending. Who you've allowed in your midst. Who you've allowed in positions of power. Who you've allowed in positions of influence. Who you've allowed to trample all over your birthright. you've allowed to break in and steal your civilization and its heirlooms.
Most important of all, do what you can to persuade Southern leaders, governors, mayors, and federal representatives to take advantage of their national radio and television time to put these points across to the Northern public. The newspapers and magazines are full of items against you every day. The TV can't completely shut you out. However, when some crisis brings one of your leaders into national attention, or can nothing be done to convince Southern leaders, governors, senators, congressmen, mayors to use their precious air time, whether it be on a riot or on open end, to strike back at this dishonesty, this creeping paralysis of mind, and this ignorance?
So what he's talking about there, obviously, is, look, the press isn't going to cover you guys. They're not going to tell your side of the story. The North literally never even hears your side of the story ever. And the only time you get on the air is when one of your leaders gets interviewed because there was a race riot or something like that, and to get a comment from you. And you have to, because he's pointing out why boomers are as terrible as they are, that there's never, ever an opposing argument. And the only way you're going to get it is if those precious moments when you are on the air, you have to phrase it this way. You have to stop talking about it like it's about states' rights. You have to talk about this in civilizational terms. You have to talk about this is for the future of our race, because that's what it is. That's what it is. That's what you think it is. So say it. And that's why I do what I do. I know I'm not going to get on Tucker Carlson. I know I'm not going to get on Fox News. I'm not going to get on some big platform. For fuck's sake, it's hard for me just to stay afloat on these little independent platforms. So those precious moments when I do have ears listening to the sound of my voice, I have to just say it how it is. I can't gussy it up. I can't say stupid shit like, well, actually, DEI is bad for black people. Burn! But unfortunately, I mean, look, the cards were stacked against him. I mean, we all know, we know what happened. You know, like, they weren't successful.
All of us know that no war was ever won by staying on the defensive. When it comes to the racial issue, the states' rights argument is both defensive and evasive. On the other hand, the racial integrity issue, which you have made more than any other state an issue in Mississippi, puts the attack into your hands where it belongs. There you have an issue that has just as much moral sanction, just as much power, just as much of the Holy Grail appeal as any issue on earth. You won't find a pastor in any church in America who can choose a text to surpass it. There's your cause with a capital C. With that cause, history's on your side. Science is on your side. Righteousness is on your side. I'll go so far as to say the American people were on your side, if you can arouse them and inform them. Now challenge the parents of America. Say to them, do you have any doubts about the genetic foundation of life? Look in that crib tonight and answer the question. Say to some of these well-meaning and blind northern leftists, if you must take money out of the pocket of the man who earned it and put it into the pocket of the man who didn't, that's one thing. That may sometimes be justified, less often than you think. Go ahead, if you must, and spend other people's money But, you hypocrites, stop trying to spend other people's children. And...
because that's what it is. Maybe that's why one of the necessary ingredients was also getting the boomers to not give a fuck about their children.
And please, in conclusion, don't whisper to yourselves, isn't it too late? Haven't we lost this fight? If you take this road, it's not too late. It's never too late to go to the heart of this kind of an issue, because when you do, eternal forces come over to your side. There's something about lifting a banner like this and keeping it clean that attracts the unseen as well as the visible hosts. And if there was one quality that characterized the breed that built America, it was that they were not afraid to slap the devil in the face. They didn't sit down and bargain with him or offer him sacrifices. When men do that, the forces of righteousness desert them. So in the last analysis, if you want to be faithful to the founding fathers, you won't ask whether you're going to win. That's not your affair. The fight is your affair. Do the best you can. I'll put it in the words of George Washington himself. Erect a standard to which the wise and honest can repair. The event is in the hands of God. Thank you.
So there's some pretty inspiring stuff there by Putnam talking about, it doesn't matter if we're going to win or lose. And that's the way I see it, honestly. I'm pretty certain that we're going to lose more before we win. We're going to win eventually. But why do I keep doing this? Right? People will even ask me, well, if it's all just pointless, why do you even do it? Well, for starters, it's not all pointless. I've never said it's all pointless. But because even if it was all for nothing, that's not up to me. What's up to me is what I did about it. I don't get to decide if we win this war or not. I get to decide whether I fight. And that's why I do it. And that's why many of you do it. And that's why we have to keep doing it. Not because there's any guarantee of that we're going to win, but because we're the kind of people that fight even when it doesn't look like we might win. Because what kind of courage is that, fighting for something that you know you're going to win? Do you think your ancestors, those of you who are founding stock, who had families that fought in the Revolutionary War, you think they thought there was a foregone conclusion that they would be able to beat the British Empire? Or did your ancestors say, I don't know if we're going to win, but let's just fucking do it? That's the genetic behavior I inherited. So unfortunately, though, one of the weaknesses of this speech is he doesn't explicitly talk about the Jews as the problem. And you need to be able to name the problem or you'll never be able to solve it. In the same way that a doctor can't give you a cure for what ails you if he doesn't know what ails you, you can't find a solution to the problem if you can't explicitly say what the problem is. And not only that, it makes it infinitely more difficult to even identify or for other people to identify the problem and all of its effects if you don't have a name for it. I've talked about this before, where I had a Chevy Cavalier, and it's just some fucking nonsense car, right? It's just like, it looks like every other fucking car in the world. It looks like some shitty, generic American sedan. And I probably saw millions of them driving around, and I never was like, oh, look, a Chevy Cavalier, until I owned one. And then all of a sudden I knew what it was, I knew what it looked like, and I had a name for it because I had one. And then I saw them everywhere. Everywhere I looked, there was like Chevy Cavaliers. I was like, fuck, how many of these fucking things are there everywhere? That's why it's important to be explicit about what the problem is. Because it'll help you recognize it when it's in other parts of our society. When Jewish influence is recognized in movies, for example, you start to recognize it when the same arguments are used in academia or in political circles. Once you're able to recognize the tactics that are used in one sort of propaganda, you see it in other kinds of propaganda too. That's why we talk about movies. Movies might seem kind of useless or self-indulgent to talk about sometimes, but it's like, no, you need to be able to recognize this, and this is an easy way to lay it out for you. Anyway, speaking of propaganda, this news piece continues and inadvertently shows that there were Jews running this whole operation. He mentions here that the local blacks actually didn't want desegregation, or at least they weren't actively fighting for it.
They do seem to prefer that. Outwardly, they have shown little interest in the battle against integration. There were no Mississippi Negroes among the Freedom Riders. Jackson Negro College students have attempted to use the white library, but even this drew no positive support from the rest of the Negro community.
So they've tried to use, like they've had tiny bits of activism, but just none of the blacks in Jackson really give a fuck. So how is all this happening? If the blacks don't have how are they able to accomplish these political victories if they themselves aren't even all that enthusiastic about it?
There appears to be a lack of leadership among the Negroes, and openly at least, they have not asked for leadership. But leadership is on the way. If not from the ranks of Mississippi Negroes, then from elsewhere. One of them is Charles Oldham, national chairman of the Congress of Racial Equality, known as CORE. CORE is the sponsor of the Freedom Riders and Oldham their spokesman in Mississippi.
The ultimate goal of our organization is the elimination of discrimination against individuals because of race or color. And this is what we are going to do for America. We feel it is essential for our own welfare, for the welfare of the citizens of the United States, and so that this is our purpose, and we will continue until it is accomplished.
Against this charged background, the issue came to a head. A bus carrying a mixed group of whites and Negroes started across the South with the announced intention of testing segregation in bus terminals, which had been ruled out by the U.S. Supreme Court. The bus was attacked in Alabama, its passengers injured. Next stop, Jackson. Mississippi had observed Alabama's handling of the riders and decided upon another course. The bus was loaded with armed troops and followed by 16 patrol cars and an airplane. All this at a cost of thousands of dollars a day. Jackson citizens watched by the hundreds, jostling each other for a better view. Swamped by the Khrushchev-like protection, the Freedom Riders stepped off the bus, some still bearing the bandages of their encounter with Alabama. They made their way through the surrounding crowd to the inside of the station. Some walked to a restroom marked white only, others to the white only coffee shop. A policeman ordered them to move on. They stood quietly. Another order, then each was arrested and led outside to a waiting paddy wagon. There was no official mention of segregation or integration. The charges were breach of the peace and inciting to riot. The trial was short. The sentence, a $200 fine, which was suspended. The suspension was refused, and the riders elected to work it out on the county jail farm.
Because they wanted to be in jail, because that was the whole point. Because now they could go to all their Jewish friends in the media after this fucking goblin Jew here arranged for all these black people to go and break the rules, knowing that they would get arrested. They refused to accept a deferred fine and wanted to stay in the prison to work off the $200 fines, which back that would have taken forever. Because you don't get paid much in prison. Even now, to get $200 working in prison would take a while. Because they wanted to be in jail. They wanted to be in jail so this goblin Jew's Jewish friends in the media could write stories about the black people in jail and how Mississippi had locked up these black people. And all they did is they tried to go to a coffee shop. He just really had to go to the bathroom. It was all manufactured. The entire thing was manufactured by these Jews. And I wish Putnam had been... I mean, he named names, and they were all Jewish names. He had to have known. But he couldn't explicitly talk about how, oh, by the way, guess what is genetic? Jewish behavior. In the same way, we don't want our societies to embrace black genetics and black behavior. We don't want our societies to embrace Jewish genetics or Jewish behavior. And until Tucker Carlson is saying something like that, it's not a celebration. You should be laughing at him. You should be humiliating him. You don't give him a red badge of gayness for not pissing on your floor.
When is this invasion going to stop?
I think the invasion will continue for some time. I don't like to use the term invasion. I think the freedom rides will continue. The purpose of the freedom rides is to protest the practices of discrimination that exists against interstate travel. And they will continue until there's been some change of policy on the part of the Mississippi police and the law enforcement agencies.
Now, it seems to me that they're merely coming in, they're being placed in jail, and I see no reaction from Mississippi officials that they're going to change anything. Now, how do you think you're going to change this?
Well, the more people that come in, the more people that make a protest against their policies, if you continue this thing, and it builds up to the point where they have some 500 or 1,000 people in jail till their jails are full, then they will have to do something.
And, you know, like I said, we all know who won that fight, unfortunately. So here are some closing remarks from the head of that organization that invited Putnam to go speak.
You think the state right theory can hold up against the federal idea and against the federal government?
That's a good question. As with most broad questions of that nature, would depend on the dynamic personalities who become involved in each. There's, of course, in human affairs, a large question of leadership. And I believe, as Thomas Carlyle said many years ago, that the so-called great man theory of politics is still true. I think the ultimate result of this conflict of authority between federal and state sovereignty is something that has not been resolved. Of course, at the present time, the trend has all been towards centralization of power in Washington. But I see, as we get around the country, increasing evidence that people, not only in the South, but in many, many states, are becoming very concerned about the consequences to themselves of the growth of big government.
And we all know how that went. See, that's not a very enticing argument. Big government. That's the problem. Don't get me wrong, it's a problem. That's, it's like you say, you might as well be trying to justify mass murder by saying that you're allowed to do mass murder because big government. Because the North is going to see it exactly the same way. Because they see it as morally equivalent. What you're doing to these poor, helpless Negroes is morally equivalent to, committing genocide. Anyway, so we all know how it went. One thing I found, it just reminded me. Here we have Putnam, who was the on the board he was the head of Delta Airlines. And then towards the end of his life, he was just on the board, probably sent a proxy, because he was like 90 something when he finally died. But he was on the board all the way up until his death in the 90s. It just reminded me, here he is talking about things that white people would just start accepting that they wouldn't find acceptable before. And I thought about air travel. And now that blacks are on airplanes, and Delta specifically.
Also in the news here today, trouble before takeoff when a passenger takes a swing at a flight attendant on board that airplane. Officials say it started with that passenger not following the rules and it would escalate into a flight fight. 7's Alex Browning live at Miami International Airport to pick up the story from there. Alex.
Well, Jeff, as that plane taxied to the runway here at MIA headed to Atlanta, we're told a couple on board that flight refused to comply with safety instructions given by the flight crew. Then things turned violent when they were told they had to get off the flight. The friendly skies, not so friendly Monday night. A confrontation between a Delta.
See, this is the kind of behavior whites have just accepted. On a Delta flight. Just be honest. If you were on that plane, you'd be like, fucking nigs. But you've already kind of just accepted that this is what happens now. That's how far our civilization has already fallen. You're already desensitized to it. When you see black people doing black people things, you're just like, fucking nigs. And it's like that with everything. Because it's no longer alien to you. Indian scammers? Yeah, fucking Indian scammers. Porno Jews? Fucking porno Jews. Everyone's already desensitized to it. It's already happened. Only took a couple generations. Anyway, I hope you guys found that enlightening. I certainly did. I haven't had a chance to read his book. I plan on adding that to my list of books to go through. Again, for those of you who would like to read the book, the title is, and you can get it, it's on archive.org for free in PDF format, but it's called Race and Reason, A Yankee View. He wrote another book, which I forgot to write down the name of, but it's also about race and I don't know if it's like a compendium or what, but it's I think he published it a couple of years later. There's also his article, his letter, open letter to Eisenhower. You can find that pretty easily on the internet. Just look up Putnam's letter to Eisenhower, and you'll be able to find it. But we've already been going here almost 3 hours, so let's take a look at Rumble Rants, I suppose, because we don't have Hyper Chats or anything like that figured out yet, or Entropy yet. We will. I'll get that. I honestly, for me, I didn't have time. I didn't have time to even try to set that up. I've been so busy the last few days. And then doing this took a lot of time today, a lot of research. It was one of those streams where I'm working on it up until the moment where it's like I'm clicking live. You can always tell because it's like usually I go live right, like I try to do it right exactly at 10. And if it's even like a few seconds later, that means I'm still like closing tabs and so anyway, it was one of those. But yeah, let's take a look here. Purple cat mint.
I hear the noise. Smell the musky odor.
What?
Purple cat mint says, "Hi, Devin. Bessemer here." Oh, look at that. We got dual personalities now. Bessemer is now a purple cat mint. And you got a purple rant popped up. So that's kind of cool. Well, thank you very much for the big support there, Purple Cat Mint, a.k.a. Bessemer. Bessemer, another product of desegregation. Jesse Poe Holiday says, "To give you a perspective on how far our country has fallen morally, women before the 1930s could be expelled from all girls' universities for flirting in public with the opposite sex. Oh, the good old days." Oh yeah, no, it's we're in completely different. Some things. I don't mind the culture changing in certain ways, I'm not saying that's maybe one of the changes I don't mind, but like people think that when you want to restore order, when you want to restore your sovereignty, when you want to stand up for your people, that somehow you're afraid of change. You just hate change. And it's like, no, I just hate things that make things worse. You know, it's like if I walk up to your car with a sledgehammer and smash a big dent in the side of the car, and then you get mad at me, and I'm like, "What? You hate change? I just changed your door for it. Why do you hate fucking change so much?" It's so fucking retarded when I hear people say stuff like that. But unfortunately, that's what they say. Things have changed radically, and mostly for the negative, over the last century. Jesse Pauliday again says, "Talked to a boomer recently. He said he won't give his only son, who is struggling financially, a dime of his wealth because he said he earned his small fortune for him and his wife. That's the thought process of a boomer. Meanwhile, Patel is sucking off the wealth of whites while shipping to America his whole village. Well, not only that, and then passing on the generational wealth of that company that he builds, like the hotel or whatever, to his children." And yeah, that's unfortunately that kind of hyper individualism that I think was necessary to implant in the minds of the boomers in order to accomplish the goals of the Jews who we've discussed tonight. That's just one of the side effects. I mean, they were really fucking good at it. If there's anything that genetic Jewish behavior is reliably good at, it's undermining white societies. Jetwire says, "Does Stat get the subscribe star donos? Hopefully. Have to catch the replay. Rumble ads are total ass. Thanks." Well, yeah, you can watch it on. I'm still live on Odyssey. We just don't have Hyper Chats there anymore. And yes, Subscribestar is still good, and I highly recommend doing that if you would like to regularly support. And I never mention this stuff. I really should. I don't know. I've always been uncomfortable with doing that. I don't know why. I should be. It's not like I'm trying to sell you guys dick pills or anything like that. You know what I mean? It could be a lot worse. I could be a lot more gauche than some of my colleagues, I suppose. But thank you there, Jetwire. Zazzy McTazbot says, I have worked with Africans and African-Americans alike, and the Africans are always better workers. Is the chip on the Negro's man's shoulder that heavy, or is escaping Africa that good of a motivator? Well, here's the thing that you need to think about. Probably the Africans that you're encountering from Africa, those are like the top Africans. Like, that's like the best and brightest Africa has to offer. That's why they're in America and not in like some jungle somewhere. African Americans, while they do have some significant even European admixture, the pizza dough, I guess, that was used to make that pizza was not the best. It was not the best and the brightest. I mean, just think about it. Who do you think's getting sold into slavery? It's going to be the tribes that are easiest to trick into cages or to defeat. So who's going to be the slaves that actually they were treated like, to some extent, livestock. And so are you going to be breeding the slaves that are clever and escape all the time? Or, you know, are you going to be breeding for kind of, more dysgenically, I guess, would be a way to put it. So you've got that. Plus you have the dysgenic effects of post-slavery. Slavery's been over a long time. And blacks reproduce early on, which means they have more generations between today and slavery than do most white people. So they've had more iterations, you could say, and the conditions that have existed for black people have been dysgenic since the end of slavery. Absolutely. I mean, I don't know if that's just, I'm just opining here. I don't know if that's how that would, I don't think that's a, I think that's a reasonable theory. Gravy Bear says, if they promoted race realism as much as they did with COVID propaganda, most people would be in favor of mass deportations. Well, that's the thing, is people need to come. That's why you need to talk about Jewish influence in the media, because that's your big hurdle. It's like, I used to think it was valuable to do this, not so much. I just don't think it matters as much. But there was a point in time where I was like, you know, everyone knows when they watch a Bollywood movie, because it's all Indians and they're, you know, dancing around and doing the Bollywood thing. But when they watch like a Hollywood movie, they think of it as American cinema, when really they should be thinking of it as Jewish cinema. And they shouldn't. It's just as much Jewish cinema as Christian rock is Christian music. You know what I mean? Like, and same thing with a lot of these news organizations, right? If you're watching CNN while Zucker was the president, I think some other Jews in charge, or I don't know who's in charge now, actually, but you're watching Jewish news. You know, you're not watching the news, you're watching Jewish news. And so that's a distinction that people need to be able to make, or else they're going to, their idea of what's normal is going to be affected by this blind spot. Man of low moral fiber says, preemptive echoing of Mr. Spritzer's wisdom and wishes. There you go. We got Decimal Threat says, the latest NASA launch was supposed to have some kind of ham radio experiment. I was just wondering if you knew anything about it. I don't know anything about it, but usually NASA will have a repeater on board that you can communicate with. there's one on the ISS, I think, right now. I haven't tried talking to it in a long time. But you can look it up and see if that's what it is. Sometimes they'll even have, they'll plan like an event. Like they'll have, the astronauts will say, like, on this day, well, you know, during this time frame, because if it's in the ISS, or even if they're just orbiting in like a shuttle or something, they're going so fast, you don't have a whole lot of time. But they'll tell you, like, when they're going to be flying over the continental United States, and then you can try to catch them while they're flying over your area. But you usually have, like, it's like, you know, you have like 5 to 10 minutes to make the contact before they're already, you know, they're already zoomed off. Which, by the way, would be impossible to fake. You know, like, there's unless they're like in jets flying like Mach 10 just to trick ham radio operators. Let's see here. Scroll. Lil Wagon says, I wonder what Mike Lindell's crackpipe Brillo pad would have to say about Jews. Yeah, I don't know. I know that he's not, he's definitely not hip to the Jews, or if he is, he's a nice little goy, because he doesn't he sponsors everyone who loves Jews and very loath to sponsor anyone that talks about them negatively. Elmo Waffen says, new platform, new name. My fat little retarded toe is no more. Elmo Waffen will be saying hi, Mom, from now on. Have a great evening. Well, there you go. I actually had an Elmo thing I was going to play tonight, and I didn't have time to edit it. Just by sheer coincidence, I had a funny Elmo. Hopefully, I'll have it for next stream. But, yeah, I was gonna have an Elmo button on my stream deck. Evergreen Dream says, the xenophobic nationalism girl from the Jubilee clip posted to Twitter about how Trump isn't a net positive to whites. Juanons like Med Gold have been convention fit as a result. What a surprise! Yeah, I don't know much about that chick. I know who you're talking about, the blonde that's in that clip that went viral, that I think she works for Elijah on his show. But I've never talked. She doesn't even follow me. Like, because when I first watched it, I was like, yeah, I didn't think that necessarily she got it from me. But she's like, oh, she's echoing some of the same sentiments that I have. And then when I went to her thing, I was like, oh, she doesn't even follow me. What the fuck? But yeah, that's, you know, that's a positive development. Again, it could have been better, but you know, it's things going in the right direction, and especially with how it made a very prominent Jew look to a lot of people. That's important. That's very important. Scrolling down here. Who's Joe says, hey Devin, what black city would you prefer to live in? Philly, Baltimore, Detroit, Memphis, St. Louis, or Atlanta? How about none of the above? None of the above. I don't want to live in any of those fucking places. I've been to... I think I've been to all those places, and they're all terrible. There's at least nice parts, sort of. Well, no, I can't. That's all. They're all horrible. I'd say Detroit and Baltimore are... they're both horrible, but there is like rich white people parts. I'm sure there's rich white people parts of St. Louis, Atlanta, Memphis too. It just, I've never seen them. So I don't know. That's like saying, would you rather be shot in the fucking dick with a 12 gauge or shot in the fucking dick with a 50 cal? It's like, I don't know. It's neither one. How about that? How about, I don't want to get shot in the dick. Scrolling down here, Rupert V21 says, Jeet here. Louis T. McFadden, great topic to stream on. He was a representative from Pennsylvania During 1920 to 1930, he was calling out Federal Reserve Jews. I think he's actually on my list. I do have a list of... because I want to go over some of these people in the 20th century that did make an effort to call this shit out at a time when it was extremely difficult to do it. Well, just because it was hard to get anyone to, you know, it was like yelling into the void to some extent. And there were repercussions for doing such things, politically, financially, and it was the censorship back then meant that they, I almost feel like it was probably to some degree easier for them to ruin your life back then than it is today. I don't know though. But based on what Putnam was saying about his associates not wanting to speak publicly because of all the different threats, it sounds like they've been playing the same game a long time. Merkin 87, first time ever catching a license stream. I can't stay awake past 10 p.m. Take my money. Well, I appreciate that. I don't even mean a license stream. A license stream? Does that mean you watch bootleg streams somewhere else? I don't know. Maybe it meant live stream. Rupert V21 says, once again, great history lesson. Going to catch the replay. Good night, Captain Stack. See you on Wednesday. Well, I appreciate that. Merkin 87 again says, sorry, I'll never do it again. Do what again? Never send a rumble rant? You should do that all the time. What are you talking about? Yeah, I don't know what you did again. Who's Joe says, being aware of racial differences and adjusting expectations is adaptive for survival. I mentioned about some girl who got assaulted after going out with Ajit. She wouldn't have suffered if she knew. There you go. Much like that video that went viral earlier in the week, the sexual harassment panda Jeet. Decimal Threat says the Mink Man rant the other week was in reference to his dogs. Terriers are tenacious rat hunters. I love to watch his videos just to see the natural enthusiasm they have for hunting rats. Yeah, I've seen those videos. It's what's shocking to me, the ones I've seen at least, is just how many fucking rats. Like, I don't have a rat problem like that. if I would just burn this fucking place down if I had a, like, some of these places they go, they like flip over a board and like 500 rats run out, and it's just like, holy shit. Now, it's nothing like that. It's like one or two here or there, but you know, it's still gross. Who's Joe says, shout out to my good friend Hans. Glad he introduced me to the Insomnia stream. Well, all right. Well, thank you. Who's Joe and Hans, whoever you might be. Thief in Law says, what I like about Jews, they really know how to dance. Yes, they do. The dancing Israelis. Which you can buy, you can, another way you can support the show, you can buy the Dancing Israeli shirt. Link in the description. Tyler W05 says, God, I wish Duke had one governor. That wasn't long ago. Most people I know here in the greater New Orleans area and down the bayou are naturally based. I love my state. Great stream tonight, Mr. Stack. Well, I appreciate that. And yeah, that would have, makes you wonder how that would have changed things, or if he would have, because then he ran for Senate too or something, right? I forget. I thought he ran nationally because he was on Donahue a bunch of times, when he was in various campaigns. Interesting. This was the guy that sent him down the rabbit hole, or at least according to Wikipedia, that's what it said. Not Dollar says the entire reason behind the immigration is because that is how our foreign policy decided to defeat China a while ago. Do Chinese not have high IQs? What? The entire reason behind the immigration is because that is how our foreign policy decided to defeat China a while ago? I don't know what you're talking about. That the entire reason for our immigration has nothing to do with China. It has to do with destroying white civilization. I don't know. I don't know what you mean by the China thing. Are you talking about the Trump administration professed reasons for wanting more H-1B visas? I don't know. China's if we're in competition with China, they're going to win because they're not doing this. They're not doing the diversity thing. So they will have all the benefits of a nation that has racial solidarity, racial identity, shared values, and everything that comes with that. And we won't. So you can import all the super smart immigrants from around the world that you want, and it might pay off some dividends in the short term, but America's not long for this world if that's the long-term strategy, and it appears to be that. Tyler W05 says, God, I wish Duke could... Oh, you already just said that. I don't know if he just said the same thing twice or if he just printed it up twice. And then we have the same repetition from Not a Dollar. Who's Joe says, hey, Devin, I think the mainstream advice for youth is maladaptive, like get into debt for college just to not make that much or enjoy youth. I'm working in multiple fields and getting different certificates to earn more and have opportunities rather than betting on one thing. Getting multiple certificates in different fields will give me better opportunities than a comp sci graduate. Yeah, it depends on what field you want to go into, but there's a lot of certifications you can get that'll allow you to make a lot of money without a whole lot of overhead. And I had friends that were literal high school dropouts that would just go get a couple, computer networking, like network administrator, Microsoft certified, rubber stamp things, and then suddenly they could go get paid $75,000 a year with very minimal education, or at least, beyond what they taught themselves. And those guys are still making good money today. And then we have Not a Dollar says, Elon Musk can say shit about Jews, or can say? I've never heard him say shit about Jews. But he can't say a word about China. That's how you know who's in charge. Whoever the rich can't criticize is their superior. Well, there you go. I think you're being funny there. Not a Dollar again says, was Genghis Khan a Jew? Why couldn't the Jews stop the Mongols? Unless we're all dumber than Mongols, then this whole theory kind of breaks down. I don't know. Not a Dollar. I have no idea what you're going on about China about. It's maybe you're being funny and it's just not clicking to me because I'm too tired. Gen Exterminator says, if you don't name the Jew, it's not all Gen Exterminator true. If you don't name the Jew, it's not all Gen Exterminator true. Alrighty, well, thank you for that. Scrolling down. Here we go. Zilla says, in your opinion, do you think this recent mainstreaming of the JQ is them losing control, or is it a pressure release valve because people like Candace and Martyr Maid don't go all the way? I think there is some release valve shit going on, but I also think that there is less ability to control the narrative because of the internet and because we have transitioned, I think, to a media environment where the internet is the dominant source for information. I think we've tipped it over to like the majority of people now, rather than getting their information from television or newspapers or like that, now get it from the internet. And as a result, a lot of this stuff is getting out in a way that never has before. And because it's true and because it's righteous, it is spreading. And that's kind of what the whole point of what Putnam was saying is that if you're on the right side, if you're on the side of truth, then don't fucking be afraid to say it. You don't have to lie. You don't have to trick people into believing it. You can just say it. And so for those of us who are just saying it, people are finally hearing it because we have at least, you know, we're not on YouTube or whatever, but we're on platforms where people can come and check out the show. And even though X, I still think shadow bans and stuff like that, obviously, you at least have some exposure now to people, and because of what we're saying is true, people are listening. Because people like, they don't always like to hear the truth, but the smart people like the truth. And that if you convince the smart people, that gets you further than convincing the stupid people in the long run. Not in the short term, but in the long run it does. Because of that, that's the only reason why you'd have pressure release valves. If there wasn't any pressure, there'd be no pressure to release. Scroll down. Rocco D2 says, I won 25 out of 28 bets in the last 5 days. You deserve a piece for doing white God's work. Well, I appreciate that. Then we got Rocco D2 again. Oh, with a big piece, with a big dono.
Money is power. Money is the only weapon that the Jew has to defend himself with.
Look how Jewy this fag is. All right. Well, I appreciate that, Rocco D2. Just don't lose your shirt betting. I'll take your betting winnings, but for your own good, don't bet the farm. All right, scrolling down. I think we got one more in here somewhere, or maybe a couple more. Here we go, Negro Spritzer, of course. Reliably expresses exactly how he feels about many of the groups featured in tonight's stream. Both those wishing to force the Negroes into white spaces and the Negroes themselves, along with some of their fellow travelers, which include all sorts of non-whites. Rocco D2 again says, should Western chattel slavery or chattel slavery be taught in schools alone without content of origins of slavery and global history of slavery rather than a narrative of whites only did it? Wait. Should Western chattel slavery be taught in schools alone without content of origins of slavery? I mean, I don't know. I don't think we're in a bad position. I don't think you have to hide the truth from kids. I don't think that you should focus obviously only on the Jews writing the textbooks have done. Obviously, you shouldn't present a narrative that falsely gives you the impression that all white people have done is enslave non-whites and oppress them all day long. But you don't have to hide that part of your history. I don't think that you need to be dishonest about it. In fact, I feel like it'd be bad to be dishonest about your history. Because it would look as though you have something to hide. Well, I don't have anything to hide. I'm not ashamed of my history. I'm not ashamed of even slavery. I mean, slavery is still going on today around the world. It's just a fact of life. It's just a fact of human societies have always had slavery, like since the dawn of time. We're all look. Technically, they've made. We're still slaves. They just made it nicer. They just gave us a little more freedom, a longer leash, and nicer slave quarters. Slipstream says, here is what I can spare in honor of retarded faggot. God rest his soul. God be with you, Mr. Stack. Well, I appreciate that, Slipstream. And then we got Man of Low Moral Fiber. I believe Mr. Ken 87 is saying he'll never stay up so late again because he's confusing licensed stream with live stream. Oh, I get it. Well, maybe he'll be up late again someday. Or maybe we'll do an early show every once in a while. I don't know. I've thought about that sometimes. Especially as I might have to get on a sleep schedule where I'm getting up early in the mornings on a fairly regular basis. Maybe the Wednesday show is earlier in the day or something like that. We'll have to see. Not Dollar says, my point is that China has a very strong incentive to wipe us off the map due to the century of humiliation. We pillaged them. Now they're humiliating us. It's common sense when you think about it. Well, I don't know. But I don't know what you meant by the other stuff. I mean, obviously China sees us as a competitor, and just like every group sees every other group as a competitor, and I don't know what you mean. They're definitely not behind white replacement though, or behind mass immigration. Gen X Exterminator says, I'm in Louisiana. Also, they're more Jew-wise people than Texas. I live in Dallas for 15 years, and most whites were liberal cucks. Texas is going to be the next California. It's already pretty much there. Texas is basically California in the 90s. It's already there. And Joe Rogan has something to do with that, honestly. But so does just the amount of Mexicans. It's not even, Texas isn't even 50% white anymore. I think we looked that up once, right? It's like it's less than 50% white already. Ronald White Wolf says, what do you think of Jason Cohn, a.k.a. No White Guilt, attacking other white nationalists for talking about the JQ and not using his lexicon? I don't know. I don't really. I haven't seen that guy's stuff since he was on, like, Mark Colette show, like, a million years ago, it feels like. But yeah, if you don't talk about the role that Jews play, you're never going to save white people. So I don't know what his reasoning is, but I disagree with it because that's just fundamental. You need to talk about how Jews play a role in white replacement, or it's like saying you want to cure lung cancer, but you're never going to talk about anything that caused, like, smoking, or what's that chemical that they put in microwave popcorn that was giving all those people in the factory cancer? that is also in some vape juices, by the way. For those of you who vape, you should look that up. But there was some chemical, speaking of capitalists, you know, just doing whatever's going to make things cheaper. There's some chemical they were spraying in microwave popcorn to give it a butter taste. And when you would microwave the popcorn and pop open the bag, that puff of steam that would come out, if you breathe that in, it would give you lung cancer eventually if you ate enough of that popcorn. And the people working at that factory were getting lung cancer. Anyway, it's like saying you want to cure a disease and then not talk about what caused it. And you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Rocco D2 says, basically I'm saying, should blacks be taught whites only created slavery in the context of my last question, considering whites bought slaves from blacks, which isn't taught? I mean, I don't know. I just think they should be taught whatever, you know, the whole story. I don't know what you're fixating on here. Clearly, the way that slavery is taught in schools is framed in a very anti-white way. And if you tell it the way that the real story of it, then it's not anti-white. And I think they should just tell the truth about it. Whatever. There's still going to be blacks that'll hate white people because of that. That's fine, whatever. I don't think they should be going to our schools anyway. They should be going to schools in Africa. Not Dollar says, is it better to be a geopolitical and historical realist or blame the Jews? Who wrote The Art of War? If all it takes is to subvert Americans is to blame anything other than China, then we lost. Are you really thinking China's up to, is doing all this? Are you really, is that, I can't tell if you're, what you're doing here. But if you're trying to say it's the Chi-Coms, then you're an idiot. I'm just sorry. You're an idiot. If you really think that after watching what I just showed you, all those people who, like the it was called the Boaz group, not the Ching Chong group. Okay. And look, we've done so many fucking streams, years of fucking streams showing explicitly, not just quote unquote, some mysterious group called the Jews, naming specific Jews. And their exact way that they influenced the West in an anti-white, white genocide direction, painting a complete and explicit roadmap of how that's happening. And the Chinese were not involved. So I don't know if, again, I don't know if you're, what you're getting at, or if you're pulling my chain here or what, but I don't know how you could possibly watch my stream and think it's the Chi-Coms. All right, guys, we're going to shut it down here. It's been a long night. I appreciate those who have, supported the show, and we'll try to get Entropy set up or whatever set up. And, I don't think the Odyssey stuff's going to be coming back. But, or at least not until they have their new thing. Maybe when they have their new thing, we'll get that up and running too. But anyway, that's all for tonight. I'll see you guys again on Wednesday. In the meantime, for Blackpilled, I am, of course, Devin Chang.
Today, being retarded means leading a full life. Retarded people go to work or school just like their neighbors and come back to a real home, a supervised home, right in the neighborhood where they belong. Being retarded never stopped anyone from being a good neighbor.